Will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 24th chapter of Proverbs we read, "By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. All-knowing God, you provide all wisdom, and you provided Solomon with the gift of wisdom and filled us with all knowledge to deal with this world as you would have us live. And Lord, strengthen our faith that we may trust that your wisdom is superior and more needed than our world can give. And provide us with mercy and grace to be compassionate towards those created in your image. In your holy name we pray. Amen."
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll. Yeah.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th is here. Senator from Butler. Senator from Butler is here. Senator from the 15th. Senator from the 15th is here. Senator from the 4th. Senator from the 4th is here. Senator from the 23rd. Senator from the 23rd is here. Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal and call the... Please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 68th day, Tuesday, May 9th, 2017. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. President Parson in the chair. Reverend Carl Gock offered the following prayer. Cast your burdens on the Lord, and he will sustain you.
Senator McCall, what purpose your eyes?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you're recognized. Close.
Close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, Jason Rosenbaum from St. Louis Public Radio has been granted permission to take photo and video in the Senate chambers today.
Thank you, Senator. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire the Senator from Cole?
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Phelps?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, before they all leave, and they got a very busy day today, and since we're past the time that we can actually officially introduce guests on the floor, but I just want to talk about the group that joined in on the Pledge of Allegiance and did a really good job. That's Mark Twain Elementary School in Rolla, Missouri. And they're very, very capable class. They take their government very, very seriously. I have two grandchildren in that class, Real Cheryl and Kennedy Brown. And all of our kids in Rolla are above average, and the temperature in Rolla is always a pleasant 75 degrees.
See, if we were still on introduction of guests, you could have just introduced your two grandkids.
I could have.
But since we don't, since the rules eliminate, as you know, Phelps County, Rolla is my home away from home.
Absolutely.
I could use a better representation for a senator down there, but it's a fine school. I have been to that school, actually.
Very nice school.
And so they did a great job, and several senators commented right after the pledge, and everybody recognized when those kids jumped in, on the pledge. It was
they took it over. They did good.
It was awesome. Senator from Callaway says it was awesome. So congratulations. These kids did a great job.
Thank you very much.
Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you recognize Senator from Webster County on House Concurrent Resolution 25?
Senator from Webster, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate substitute for Concurrent Resolution 25 taken up for adoption.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Webster. Does any Senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator, you may proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senate Concurrent Resolution 25 calls for the establishment of the State Health Care Innovation Waiver Task Force for Missouri. As you know, a priority of the new administration in D.C. is to give states more flexibility and allow innovation in health insurance. The need for action on health care reform is urgent, hence the purpose of this resolution. Currently, there is only one multi-state provider left in Missouri, and they're talking about leaving this state. In March, Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price sent a letter to the governor encouraging them to apply for a Section 1332 waiver under the Affordable Care Act, which allows states to pursue innovative strategies to craft health care programs that suit their particular needs. The resolution calls for a 16-member task force, with the chairman to be appointed by the Speaker of the House and the vice chair appointed by the Senate pro tem. The task force includes prominent members of the governor's cabinet, attorney general, key industry experts, and representatives and senators. The job of this task force is to develop a report to the General Assembly, which will include a plan for a state innovation waiver, which would go into effect plan year beginning January 1st, 2019. The resolution requires the task force to host its first organizational meeting within 15 days of the resolution being adopted, so we can move it along. The task force required to submit a report, including...
Senate will come to order. Senate will come to order. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you. Including possible legislation along with the draft waiver application no later 20 days before next year's veto session. The task force will terminate by December 31st, 2018, unless the members vote for termination beforehand. This will give us some idea. If this should come about, it gives us a jump on what's going to happen, recommendations, and then they can be taken up. The task force has no authority. It would give the House and the Senate a little bit of an idea where we might start some ideas and bring in industry experts. And with that, Mr. President, I'd be glad to take any questions. If not, I renew my motion.
Senator from Senator Webster, could you move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute?
I'm sorry. I thought I did. I'm sorry. I do move for the adoption, Mr. President. I apologize.
The Senator from Webster has moved for the adoption of Senate committee substitute for Senate committee resolution number 25. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Webster.
Senator from Webster, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 24th?
Yes, I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I actually just don't have that resolution in front of me, but I remember having a couple of questions, so I wanted to just ask.
I'm sorry, I don't know if your mic's on or if it's in.
Let me move it to this side.
Okay. Thank you.
So I just had a couple of questions
for
you.
Thank you. That's better.
Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
The makeup of the committee, again. I know you said senators and representatives. Can you remind me of the numbers?
The total number is 16 to be put on it. It's in the resolution it outlines who's to be put on it.
Right.
I can go over it if you like or if you want to look at the resolution.
I just wanted to know how many senators and how many representatives.
Let's see. One member of the House of Representatives, one member of the Senate, the Director of Insurance, plus the chairs, the vice chair and the chair. Excuse me.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that there will be... The legislature will not be a bipartisan representation. It doesn't sound like it.
No, it is not.
Okay.
It would be up to the president pro tem and the speaker to appoint those people.
And then one senator and one representative in addition to that?
Yes, that's what the resolution says.
Right. And then, you know, my other concern, and, you know, one of my other two concerns is how many people that utilize health care that are not affiliated with some group like insurance or being an elected official, how many just normal people that need to access health care may be a part of the state system? Are there any of those people on there that can talk about their concerns and their situation?
It's been a while since I read this, and I want to. There is a physician that's going to be supposed to be on it, and a member of the hospital association, insurance person. One physician appointed by the pro tem, one by the speaker, one representative of Missouri Pharmaceutical Association, one member of the home care health care industry, one in person who is a consumer advocate.
All right. Your committee.
Senate will come to order. Please take your conversations to the side gallery or the back of the chamber so the senators can hear. Senators, you may proceed.
Thank you. So the way we're representing somebody who is a Medicaid recipient is through one consumer advocate.
Through the consumer advocate. And the physicians could be, too. I mean, I don't know what position the physicians would take, but they could give an idea of what's needed. So I wouldn't say I wouldn't say it's along party lines with the physicians nor the insurance agent. It's just a combination. And what this matches up with, there's actually a House bill they're trying to get over here and get on the couch. It's not going to happen, but we tried to keep it the same language whenever we did this a couple weeks ago or a month ago.
Right. So I just have my concerns about making sure a minority voice is heard and the people who are truly utilizing our state health care plan, our Medicaid plan, are represented. And so that's just a question I would raise. My final question was on the timing, and I do have a copy of this now.
Thank you very much,
in front of me. So doesn't a report, so the task force shall submit its report to the legislature no later than 20 days prior to the convening of veto session next year.
Yes.
All right. So I thought I had remembered, and maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, that there was something that had to be done by January of 2018. Am I wrong about that?
I'm sorry. You're going to have to repeat that. I could not hear you.
I thought there was something in here that required the task force to...
It's quite apparent the senators cannot hear one another speaking to one another in the debate. We'd ask the Senate to come to order so they can finish out their debate. Senators, you may proceed.
The task force is to be terminated by December 31st, 2018.
The end of next year.
Yes.
And the first time that it is required to provide its findings is 20 days prior to veto session, not this year,
next year. Yeah.
Okay.
And they have to have their first organizational meeting within 15 days. And the reason for this, and they tried to keep, they knew they needed a couple legislators on there just to move it along. They sometimes find that if you just have consumer-driven or people, they kind of put things off at legislators, which kind of makes you wonder, but they felt that they got things done. And could organize it and knew how to organize and set it up better.
All right.
For everybody.
I don't think it's a bad way to go about figuring out what we're going to do going forward. I want to make sure that there is representation from more than just one party.
The consumer advocate should do that.
And the consumer advocate will have a big responsibility on her or his shoulders to make sure that they're representing the people that
are.
And
it would have to go through a procedure, have committee meetings, et cetera, like that, and have, before we adopted anything, this is just recommendations. This is people that experts, and we could not have them come in here. So this is just experts in the field that could meet and present ideas that we may want to consider. We may not even want to do it. That's going to be up to the body. But this just opens up for where there's some recommendations.
Did you say the recommendation, the makeup of the task force is not a recommendation? It is.
No, it is it's stated in the resolution.
It's stated, but the recommendations that will come from that task force
yes,
are,
Senator.
We don't know what those will be. They could
no, we
be,
don't have a clue. But that, I mean, I wouldn't have a clue if something came along right now. And most people probably wouldn't. And probably the insurance agents will have more idea what it takes to get people covered than anyone, in all honesty.
You anticipate that you will be a member of this task force?
I hope not, Senator.
Well, if you get asked, just let them know that I'm happy to fill in
okay,
and take your place as the Senator.
Yeah, the President pro tem and the Speaker to make
right.
that up.
Right, okay. All right. Well,
Senator, before we enter in this inquiry, I do want to publicly thank you for a phone call you made.
Oh, yeah. So I hope everybody in your district is...
Yeah, during the flooding situation, I visited down there again last week in one little town, third oldest town in the state, it had 45 houses in it, 43 of them are wiped out.
Oh, my gosh.
And so these people are just total disarray. I would say the DNR has been very good. They came down and said, all rules are off. You know, take care of stuff. Don't litter. Don't do this. Do that. But all basic rules are off. We'll worry about those later. And the commitment's unbelievable.
What are those people doing that have been displaced? 43 homes?
43 homes wiped out, and only 45 in the little community. It's called Thomasville, and it's a community now. But at one time, West Plains is 12,000 people. One time is bigger than West Plains. But I think they said established
right?
in 1803. But thank you for your phone call.
Well,
see those people. I mean.
I was thinking about my friends in the southern part of the
state. They were like little beavers and ants moving around when I was there. They were grabbing this, grabbing that, and they couldn't get enough dumpsters. And we got on the phone and got six more dumpsters delivered and things. And Bass Pros, the rescue, they came over there to help rescue people out of West Plains. And there was a boat involved. The fire department owned it. And the motor quit, and then it crashed, and then they had to rescue the people in the boat. And but... We have an organization that's considering donating one, so that's going to be a big help. It's weird. They had back to insurance. They had insurance on the boat, but it didn't cover it unless it's on dry land.
The insurance didn't cover the boat unless it was on dry land?
Yeah.
Well,
seems a little strange, but they use that for river
rescues. Got to read the fine print, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So are the kids there in school, and is all that?
No, there isn't a school there that's closed now. But it was amazing. They were tearing the floor out of the church and all that, but they had services. They were planning on service 7 o'clock Sunday morning.
I'm sorry, I'm having
They were planning on having church services there 7 o'clock Sunday morning. And the floors tore out of it, all the restroom facilities and all that, but that, the community's together. It brings people together. Great people
yes.
in Missouri.
Yes, it does. And so where did you say, where are the people who are displaced? Where are they staying now?
I don't know.
All over
I
the
just
place.
Visit with the fire chief, the sheriff, and stuff. So what do you need? And they've been down there and everything. And the senators, the U.S. senators, have been very helpful. And Congressman Smith has all been. But I just wanted to publicly thank you about that.
Well, I wanted to make sure everybody was okay. Right. And as you know, I think all of us feel like if we can help our neighbors when there are tragedies like this,
yep,
natural
that's the reason why you're here.
We'd like to do
help,
that.
To help your
all
neighbors.
Right.
Okay. Thank
well,
you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan. Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Okay, Senator. Medicaid program is about $9 billion.
Right.
If you look at the Senate resolution number 25, the original one, and then you look at the Senate concurrent resolution, the Senate committee sub, and you just look at the first page, okay, and you can see what happened here. On the first page, in the middle of the page, on the original one, it says three members of the Senate with two members from the majority party and one member from the minority party. Then on the Senate committee sub, it's one member of the Senate appointed by the president pro tem. Okay, then you see three members of the House, two from the majority, one from the minority, and then in the Senate committee sub, you see one from the House. Then you see the directors of the departments. And then you see one person with expertise in healthcare delivery, one person with expertise in health insurance, one person with expertise in healthcare delivery to be appointed by the other one, one person with expertise in health insurance be appointed by the speaker, one person who is a consumer advocate. Now, if you look on the Senate committee sub, you see one representative or member of the Missouri Insurance Coalition, one representative member of the Missouri Association of Insurance Agents, one representative or member of the Missouri Association of Health Underwriters, one representative or member of the Missouri Hospital Association, one physician from the pro tem, one physician from the speaker, one representative of the Missouri Pharmacy Association. I mean, I think it's pretty simple that you can see what happened between the Senate version, I mean the original version and the Senate committee sub. These special interest groups want their slice of the $9 billion. That's what I'm seeing.
Well, and I appreciate you pointing that out. I actually don't have, I have sort of a summary of the original SCR. Oh, maybe here it is. And I am a little bit concerned about the balance of people serving on this committee and what their agendas may be and what I believe the importance is of having a minority voice and a voice of somebody who is going to be receiving on the
receiving. I could not imagine that you would be willing to sit down without a minority voice on this task force, which is going to be controlling one-third of our state budget. I mean, having an influence on it. I also am kind of offended that these special interests are specifically named, but I didn't see the Missouri State Medical Association in there, and I didn't see the Missouri State Osteopathic Association in there. And, you know, the thing is, let me tell you what my big fear is.
Okay.
Which is just, let's just go directly to the target. You saw this year a gigantic effort to put moms and kids in outstate Missouri on managed care.
Right.
And we still don't know how much Centene gave Governor Greitens. You know, we have no idea. It's dark. We don't know how much of the couple million that he got in dark money came from managed care entities. We do know that it was a constitutional violation to, and we still haven't got the signed budget, so they're still operating without an appropriation, this managed care companies. And right. Let me tell you what the goal, as I see it, of this is. When you stack this thing with the insurance coalition, insurance agents, underwriters, etc., what you really want to do here is you want to put the ABD population on managed care, the aged, blind, and disabled. I mean, that's where this is going. That is, I mean, how else do they propose to do this other than to create some kind of an entity or some kind of a program that will manage these people and thereby siphon off their slice of the money pie. And that's what I see happening.
So, I don't know when we got this substitute.
You don't think it'll involve...
But I don't disagree with you that there is an imbalance on the task force towards the side of those who, frankly, have the most to gain by the the outcome of the decision that we make, the financially the most to gain. So, and I, as you mentioned, I'm concerned about the limitation on the minority voice that is no longer in the substitute that was in the original concurrent resolution. So, you know, I don't know what happened between the original resolution and the bringing forward of the Senate committee substitute.
By the way, I want to tell you that the senator from Webster just told me that he believes that this resolution is not about Medicaid, but it's about health care in general. And I suspect that that would include Medicaid. But if that's the case, instead of being a $9 billion item, it's probably probably a $100 billion item or something.
Well, certainly what we have direct impact on and jurisdiction over is the Medicaid, the state portion of this. And what we do with the Affordable Care Act and the implementation, you know, we haven't done much to support it since it was first implemented, but what we do in that regard is largely going to be dependent upon what the federal government does. So to suggest that, you know, yes, we may have ideas about some things we want to do, or this task force may have them, but really what we have primary jurisdiction over is the state-run program. So my question to you would be, let's sort of walk through what the options are. I mean, I see that you can see my real concern with just the makeup alone of the task force. And, you know, I could go back and inquire once again of the senator from Webster and see what prompted his change in the original SCR to this new SCR. And see if we can turn back the page a bit on who the people would be that make up this task force, so that it does have more of a balance and more of a diverse voice than just those special interest groups that, you know, I'm not opposed to them having a voice at the table, too. They're going to be, in some cases, implementing decisions that are made. They have direct knowledge of how our healthcare system is working with regard to what they provide, but I also think it's you know, there are real concerns about how and who put on this that you brought forward. So I appreciate that.
Well, you know, I worry about how this process plays out and if it's stacked with, you know, insurance people. And I think back about how we came up with the ACA. And the process of developing the ACA was so perverse. I feel like the entire process in Congress was dominated by these special interest groups that ended up getting protected at the expense of the people. You know, and so I myself would, if we're going to study this, I want to make certain that anything that comes out of this group cannot be put forward without a vote of the legislature. You know, that's, and I haven't had an opportunity to inquire of the senator from Webster, but it talks about them developing this draft application. Well, it needs to say something like no possible draft application could be submitted by anybody unless the legislature weighs in on it. I mean, like, I don't want to give up my vote to a group of 16 people appointed by two people, the pro tem and the speaker. I mean,
right.
I'm not good with that. And especially right. you probably wouldn't want to do that, being that there's no minority members on there.
Right.
I mean, what I have observed in my time here is that minority members have a different worldview generally than majority members. And that your worldview is important, and a lot of times I agree with your worldview more than sometimes the majority of the majority.
Well, and I think that, you know, at the end of the day, the majority rules, but I also think that input from a different perspective and another voice will help refine and make something better at the end of the day. Just when we try to understand each other and understand different perspectives, it doesn't hurt anything. It helps inform and helps sometimes even just a tweak that can have an impact on the people that we are here to serve. So, you know, I appreciate your comments in that regard, and I agree with you that even though the minority opinion may not rule and will not rule, it's certainly an important addition to
the discussion.
To the discussion. Exactly.
Well, just to be blunt, as written, the Senate committee substitute allows for no minority members.
Right.
Unless, by the goodness of his heart, either the pro tem or the speaker appoints a minority member.
Right, but there's certainly nothing that requires that. And, you know, if I'm a member of the majority party and it gives my pro tem or my speaker the ability to appoint someone, and he, in both cases, does not appoint a member of his own party, I would question that. So I think that unless it's written in there that it is going to be a majority member, and we already have majority members on there. So I think that it would be helpful to propose either some additions to the committee or some substitutions on the committee. So, Senator, I don't know if you are, if you feel like you would like to talk to the Senator from Webster a bit more. I'd love to go over to the table and talk with the staff about some changes that take us back closer to where this started. And if you would be willing...
Well, before you do that,
okay.
Why don't you make a note, a few notes?
Sure.
First of all, I think that there should be at least two members, one from each party, from each body. Do you agree?
That resolution will be placed on the informal calendar. Oh, Senator, you'll need to withdraw your motion. Senator from Webster withdraws his motion, and that will be placed. They will hold it. All right, Senator from Cole.
President, staying on that same order of business of concurrent resolutions, would you recognize the Senator from the 23rd District on House Concurrent Resolution number 47?
Senator from the 23rd, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House Concurrent Resolution 47 be brought before the body for final passage.
You've heard the motion made by the Senator from the 23rd. Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no.
Said aye.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, do you care to move for the adoption of the... Senator, is before the body. Do you care to explain your resolution?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. House Concurrent Resolution 47 has to do with transportation funding in the state of Missouri. A few weeks back on this body, I stood up here and talked about the need to have a conversation about transportation and transportation funding here in the state of Missouri, and I expressed my disappointment that we were unable to have that discussion on the floor of the Senate chamber this year. And as I have previously mentioned, Mr. President, the problems surrounding our infrastructure and the problems surrounding our transportation funding extend to every corner of Missouri, and this is something that my constituents in the 23rd District have repeatedly talked to me about as a need to solve a problem which affects, as I said, every single Missourian in the state. House Concurrent Resolution 47 is what I believe our best opportunity to take a step in that direction of coming up with a transportation funding solution. And specifically what it will do, it will convene a group of legislators and advisors that will come up with recommendations that the Assembly can take up in future years and adopt as part of the overall long-term solution to our transportation needs. Specifically, the task force that will be convened as a result of HCR 47 will first of all include five members of the House of Representatives. three members to be appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and at least one of whom is on the Transportation Oversight Committee. Two members appointed by the Minority Leader will be added to that task force. In addition, five members of the Senate, three members from appointed from the President Pro Tem of the Senate, and two members appointed by the Minority Leader. The Governor or his designee, the Director of the Department of Transportation or his designee, the Director of the Department of Economic Development or his designee, and the Superintendent of the State Highway Patrol. In addition, nine Missouri residents or representatives from non-governmental organizations from within Missouri will be added to this task force. What you have here is a wide variety of voices from around the state and representing most parts of the state that will come together and come up with a list of recommendations on what we should do with our transportation funding. Even in this body, we have a contrast in how we should accomplish that end. As I have stated previously in this chamber, I believe that we actually already have the resources at our disposal to fund and properly fund and take care of our roads for now and into the future. And on the other hand, there is a train of thought that we need to look for additional revenue sources. In order to come up with a coherent message of what we think we should do moving forward, I have agreed to carry, and I'm supportive of HCR 47 to find what that balance may be. Mr. President, I am happy to answer further questions.
The senator from the 23rd moves that House Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution number 47 be adopted. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise? Senator from 23rd, do you yield to the inquiry from the senator from Butler?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator from Butler, you may proceed.
I think you're on a really good path here, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Here we are.
Here we are. You want to have that debate for a while?
We can. I think I'm never going to turn down an opportunity to talk about transportation.
Well, I'm really glad that you're really into transportation. And before I got here in the Senate, Senator from Cole, he worked all over the state, worked everywhere, probably senators before. The senator from Cole even worked on it. Because, as you know, we have not had a revenue adjustment in 21 years. Senator.
That's correct.
And so it's not like this is a new issue on this floor, but I'm glad you're heading it up because last year this body passed funding of highways, roads, and bridges over to the House. We sent it over and they refused to take a vote to allow the citizens of Missouri to weigh in on whether or not they thought roads and bridges were and other types of infrastructure were important enough to pay a little bit more of a user fee for better highways and bridges for safety, economic development, so on and so forth. But I do want you to know that's been discussed many, many, many hours on this floor. I myself, when I became chairman of Transportation and Public Safety, I felt obligated to go all over the state on my own time, just like my predecessors, to talk to all types of folks around the state that's interested in good highways. But, there's always been a lot of talk about, we're getting enough money up here anyway, and I couldn't agree with you more. We need to be spending our tax money wisely. However, general revenue funding of highways and bridges disproportionately targets Missourians and not those who use our highways and bridges. Would you like to comment?
I didn't know I was letting you finish there. I think you're right. I think you bring up a good point about if we use, and certainly I think the body already knows that you and I have some differences of opinion on this particular issue.
Well, not much. We agree on a lot of stuff.
We do agree on a lot of stuff. But in fact, I don't think you and I have never called for toll roads.
I'm sorry?
We've never called for toll roads.
No.
We see eye to eye on that one.
We're totally in agreement on toll roads.
Okay. So when it comes to general revenue versus the fuel tax, I think is what you're getting at.
Right.
A change in the fuel tax.
Let's say a fuel user tax.
Fuel user
because
tax.
Because to me, a user or consumption tax has always been a really conservative position.
I'm a conservative. I understand that argument. I understand completely where you're coming from.
Then you should support adjusting the motor fuel user tax because it's thought in all of my research that I've done and I've seen approximately 50% or more of fuel that's being used in the state of Missouri, including the trucks that go through the state, 50% of that we're collecting is from out-of-state motorists. So if you start taking money out of general revenue or trying to fund transportation out of general revenue, the only way that those folks are going to pay a little bit more to help us with 21st century needs is if they happen to buy a hot dog or a piece of pizza or whatever, we get our 4-point-whatever-it-is sales tax on that, and that's it. But yet, when we go to states like Pennsylvania, who's now almost 80 cents a gallon on motor fuel user tax, and we got states all around us that's passing 10 to 20 cents a gallon on there, and nowhere have we ever, including the senator from Cole or anybody else, had ever put forward such a bill that would have that much of an increase.
I understand. First of all, I acknowledge where you're coming from, Senator. First of all, let me take this in different parts. First of all, I agree with you about the idea behind consumption taxes. I've generally been supportive of a consumption tax model. The reason I'm not supportive of increasing the fuel tax is because even though Missouri has one of the lowest fuel taxes in the nation, they're already spending and sending more money to Jefferson City than they ever have before.
Now hold it. Hold it just a minute. Not in motor fuel user taxes, they're not.
You're right.
Well, let's make sure that information that you and I share, and call me out too also if I say something that you feel like that might not be accurate.
Let me say it in a different way then. Whether they're paying less in motor fuel tax and more in a different area, overall, the money that's coming out of their pockets going to government in some form or another for some cause or another is greater than it's ever been before.
But, Senator, I'll give you that.
Okay.
I'll give you that. But the thing about it is, did you read the little short op-ed I wrote recently about where all these roads come from?
I did.
Okay. Well, that's where they came from.
Well, and actually,
that's where they came from.
Part of this conversation also has to do with the network that we're asking MoDOT to manage. So, but before I go there,
okay.
To finish my thought about fuel taxes, the reason I'm opposed to fuel taxes is because Missouri citizens are already being asked.
You mean a fuel user tax?
To support taxes in government from one form or another to agree they've never been asked to before. So you're right. You're right when you say that they're paying a lower fuel tax
I'm not arguing that point. You may be arguing that point. I'm not arguing that point.
But I'm telling you why I don't agree that we should increase fuel tax.
I'm just saying, logically thinking, when you go to the pizza place, do you think you're still buying a pizza at 1996 prices?
No, of course not.
Okay. Well, now, you know, I kind of felt the same way a lot of people in the legislature once I got here. Of course, you know, I used to be in the trucking industry. And, oh, by the way, the trucking industry supports a lot more fuel use tax than 2 or 4 cents or 5 or 6 cents a gallon. You know, they're up to around 10 or 15 cents a gallon that they would support because they're tearing their rigs up. It's causing inefficiencies on lots of different highways and stuff. But you know, right therein lies the problem that we have. In 1996 was the last time we adjusted the rate.
Okay.
All right. Well, MoDOT, previous to around 2010, 2011, like any prudent business, they said, you know what? We need to improve our operations and efficiencies also. They went back. They closed 3 district offices. They right-sized from 6,000-some employees to over 5,000. In a matter of about 5 years, they put back into our roads and our maintenance of our highways about $600 million in savings. Now, after 6 years of them proving that, hey, we are getting more efficient, we're doing a better job of spending our taxpayer dollars, which you and I agree with that, right? We agree we should maximize how we spend our tax dollars.
Of course.
Okay. Well, I always like to, you know, say what we agree on, because actually we agree on a whole lot more than what we disagree on.
Fair enough.
Not just on this subject either, by the way. So therein lies the issue. If they weren't doing the things that a prudent business would do when they see their revenues are falling, and, you know, the fuel usage has been flat, Senator, for a long, long time.
And do you expect that to get better, or do you expect it to start actually decreasing over the long term from here on out?
I think it's probably going to stay a little bit flat. I mean, depending on economics and things like that, it could slightly rise up. But a lot of it's got to do with the CAFE standards and things that was handed down from Washington, D.C. you know, on vehicles and big trucks.
I would make the case that
I started in the trucking business, big trucks went from like 3.5 miles a gallon to 6.5.
Right. I would make the case that if anything, because our population's not growing and the efficiency of our cars are getting are getting better, there's a really good chance that the fuel tax as a revenue source is also going to be, over the long term, going to be decreasing.
Do you think if we told somebody on Interstate 70 or 44 or Interstate 55 that we thought traffic was decreasing, you think anybody would believe us this morning?
No, I don't. In fact, if you look at the snapshots that MoDOT puts out, the number of driver's licenses that have been issued in the state has nearly doubled just in the past. So we actually have more drivers, which tells you just how more efficient those cars are getting. So if those cars are getting more efficient, but our overall population is not growing, that implies that over the long term, we're going to see less gallons sold in the state of Missouri. So if we're changing and trying to rely upon the fuel tax, which you've accurately identified as the mechanism that we put in place, we're setting ourselves up for failure, because eventually we're only going to see reducing returns.
The reason why we have this revenue failure is a courage problem. We have a courage problem.
I think
the deal is, for 21 years, we have not adjusted that rate. And that rate is protected monies. It don't go in. It's not subject to appropriations. You read the article, but I'm going to go through it with you again anyway. Because just in case, if everybody didn't read that really great article that I wrote recently. You know, we have six commissioners, citizen commissioners, unpaid commissioners, by the way, that oversee the spending of that money. And we have over 20 regional planning commissions that takes it down locally on how they prepare and plan their roads and bridge needs. And, you know, we're affecting the counties really bad in the cities. I got some numbers here for you. In the state, in fiscal year 12, we got in $496 million in the state here. Because, see, the state only gets 70% of the 17 cents currently. You're aware of that, right? Right? You're aware of that?
I am.
You have to say something, because people listen to us. They don't see you nod unless they're watching us on video or something. So in 2013, we received $488 million. In 2014, we received $488 million. 2015, we received $494 million. In 2016, we received $511 million. Now, what that tells me, as I look back at it, it's been pretty much level a lot of times. And probably in 1924, we decided we need to quit driving in mud. And it was mud back then. It wasn't, you know, like chat on the roads and all that kind of stuff. We started with mud and then gravel, so on and so forth. But anyway, in the cities, you know how much the cities received in 2012? $101 million. That's all the cities, you know, splitting it up. In 2013, 99.4, 14 around 100, 15 around 100, 16 around 100. Now, all their costs have been going up. You agree that we have somewhat of an inflation rate, right?
Correct.
You know, concrete, labor, steel, it's all pretty much tripled.
Well,
but yeah, we're still operating on the same revenue base in the 20th century. And here we are 17 years into the 21st century. So therein lies the issue, that it's not those who planned the motor fuel user tax that worked pretty good for many years, because as our state expanded and jobs and people being able to afford gas. Myself, I sold gasoline for 19.9 in Poplar Bluff in 1971. That was my first business. Most people bought it $1 worth at a time. They'd get 5 gallons. No such thing as self-service. No, by the way, we didn't sell pizza and hot dogs in gas stations back then either. So anyway, so there we go. But people were getting more like, my first pickup, I think I got like 8 miles to the gallon. Somewhere in there. You don't remember that, but some of the folks that have light gray in her hair around here, they'll probably remember some of the old pickups and the four-wheel drives. Matter of fact, the senator from Barton over here, he drives an old pickup around, because I rode in it one time in Branson, and we had a U-joint problem going on. But anyway, those older trucks didn't get much fuel mileage. Now you get pickup trucks that may get 20, 25, 30 miles per gallon. That's a good thing, don't get me wrong. But see, they were anticipating that usage to continue going up. Well, it hasn't.
And that stopped when our population stopped growing.
Well, it's got a lot to do with that, but it's also mostly got to do with miles per gallon on trucks and cars. Now, just because a big rig, an 18-wheeler, goes across the state of Missouri and they don't buy any fuel for whatever reason, they don't have to buy fuel in Missouri because, you know, big rigs, sometimes we have on as much as 600 to 800 gallons of fuel on them. And we can almost go coast to coast. But a lot of times we don't want to carry that extra weight for no reason because you're just carrying all that extra weight around. But they still have to pay what their average mile per gallon is through their IFTA agreements. So they're paying their part even though they didn't buy anything, because when they turn their fuel tax reporting in, they have to pay their part, and it's based off of that. So they're not getting no free ride either. But tourists that come into our state, when they come in and use our state, they're paying 17 cents a gallon. When we go to Illinois, places like that, it's like two, three, four times, because they have all these other types of taxes on top of their fuel taxes. They have sales taxes, county taxes, district taxes on top of their fuel taxes. And I mean, it's just amazing what's happened in other places. Now, a lot of people, they say, well, we just do toll roads. Well, we only have one toll, or only one road that we can actually toll legally right now, and that exemption's about out, and that would have been Interstate 70. However, I think toll roads are a little bit of a cop-out, to be honest with you, because it's spelled T-O-L-L instead of a T-A-X, motor fuel user tax. You know, it's nicer to say, how about a toll road? You know, actually, folks in my district down there, they might be okay with tolling Interstate 70.
It doesn't affect them.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't affect them.
Well, and there's people in other parts of the state probably wouldn't care either, but you're not going to be able to toll all these roads everywhere. Now, that's not to say, you know, we have a toll bridge down here at Lake of the Ozarks. You're aware
that's
of that, right?
That's correct, yep.
Well, I don't know how it's done, but anyway, they did put a toll bridge down there. So I'm not necessarily saying never, ever have something that might maybe go across a river or something like that for some industry or 1,000 or 2,000 jobs or whatever, maybe over in the St. Louis area where we need to get into an area on the ports or something like that. You know, there could be a place for that. But we've had absolutely the most fairest way of paying for our roads and bridges for 93 years. 93 years it's got us to where we're at today.
Well, Senator, I didn't want
to
interrupt.
This is time I look at you and wait for you to say something.
So, I didn't want to interrupt you. This is your inquiry.
I'm sorry?
This is your inquiry. So
yeah,
I didn't want to interrupt you. I'd like to make a couple points here, and I would ask for your indulgence not to to let me get through that. You've mentioned the word courage a couple times, and I think specifically you've mentioned it in terms of the courage to pass a fuel tax increase.
That's correct, like in 1992 when John Ashcroft.
And I think specifically a lot of those times, that type of comment is directed to folks like myself.
No, not
that,
necessarily.
That are a lot more hesitant.
It's everybody in the whole state.
Sure, and I know that's not a personal attack. I'm just saying that is a way to encourage. From my perspective, and I know this is where you and I disagree, a lot of times I think people are frustrated with government because every time we see a problem, we ask for more money. And the only way we solve a lot of our problems is that we ask for more money regardless of the justification. And in this case, we would be asking for more money in the form of a fuel tax. And sometimes I think courage means standing up and saying no to more government and more taxation. And when we're in an environment where right now the people of Missouri are giving more money than they ever have before, it's not that I don't believe that the fuel tax mechanism hasn't been a good mechanism up to this point, but I do believe that for two reasons. One, because fuel tax revenues may be in danger of going down over the long term, so no matter what we raise it in the short term, we're continually going to have this problem. We're not going to fix the problem because the mechanism and the reasons it worked 50 years ago don't apply today. And the second reason is because we do have a record amount of general revenue, if we can set up a period of time to where we're setting up and using general revenue to fund our priorities for the next 10 years, because a big problem that our books have when it comes to transportation, as you've correctly identified, is not that MoDOT is not doing their part. It's not that MoDOT is
wasting
money.
Well, they're accused of that a lot of times.
They are accused of that, but I agree with
correct.
You. I agree with that generally they're doing a pretty good job.
Generally accused by people that's never stood there and held a sign when somebody goes by you 75 miles an hour texting.
I agree. I agree with you.
You know, we lose MoDOT workers every year.
So that's not the problem. That's not the problem. What the problem is, though, is if you look at our books, our MoDOT books.
Our MoDOT what?
If you look at the books that MoDOT keeps as our expenses and our revenues that MoDOT has and has to deal with in their budget, what's happening is the bonds that we took out, in Amendment 3 back in 2004, 2007, that's a payment of about $300 million a year.
Yeah.
For the next 10 years, that $300 million has to go towards a bond payment that could otherwise be going to the very roads and bridges that we are struggling with the condition in today. At that point, 10 years from now, we start coming away from those bond payments, and suddenly funds that aren't available to us now will be freed up as long as we don't continue to indebt the state. So if we can come up with a 10-year plan, which is what my bill was, it was a 10-year plan to dedicate general revenue.
Funding highways and bridges have to be 5-10-year plans, and they can't be subject to appropriations either. That don't work.
Well, we have examples. You're right. I understand there's some concern that you can't bind the hands of legislatures. But we have, I mean, you and I both voted for the funding, fully funding the formula. That's a statute requirement that we didn't completely get there in previous years, but we did for the first time this year. So it does move the ball forward. It does move the goalposts down the field.
You know, we got a serious problem here. The fact of the matter is, no matter what you and I say, the facts reveal this. We have experienced up to triple digit increases in concrete, asphalt, steel, labor, welders, building highways and bridges. And we have not adjusted the rate. You looking for something? You need something?
I'm sorry, Senator.
You
I'm
having a hard time hearing
I'm
me.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Senate will come to order so the senators can hear one another in debate. Senators, you may proceed.
Is a senator from the 5th bothering you over, Senator?
I think I'm being heckled a little bit, Senator.
Huh? You laughing at me?
I think she's laughing at both of us a little bit. It's okay. It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Well, let me start from the first stem where I started at earlier when I first inquired you. Just in case if you missed something of it.
Well, like I said,
look,
Senator,
there's no doubt in.
Go ahead.
There's no doubt in my mind. I feel the same way you do on the overreach and overtaxation of our citizens. Now, with that said, that's why I really love a consumption tax, especially for the roads and bridges, because you can't argue, Senator, that for 93 years. That's how we've gotten to where we're at now. That's funded us. And it's fair. It's equitable. Because if you drive a little more, you pay a little more. You drive a little less, pay less. If you don't drive at all, you still experience the great rewards of having a great highway system, distribution system. Because, you know, when you go up here at Colton Steakhouse, a really good place to eat.
We've been there. You and I have been there a couple times.
Yeah, we've been there a few times. Really good place to eat, and you order that grilled chicken salad. What do you think that lettuce would taste like in the wintertime if it came by like in a trunk of a car from California or something, you know, or by a train, or by stagecoach? Chances are in Oxnard, California, right now, as we're speaking, right now, unless the drought got them up in there somewhere, but right now there's somebody picking all them vegetables and lettuce. And today's Wednesday. By Saturday, that will already have been picked, washed, boxed, loaded on a truck, delivered to a warehouse around here, redistributed right to that restaurant, ready to go, and we'll be slicing into that grilled chicken salad. Now, the folks that don't even own vehicles, one of the reasons why we have one of the lowest cost of food here in this country is because of our distribution system. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. That's definitely a factor.
I mean, you don't have to. I was just curious.
No, I agree with that. I mean, the more availability you have to move goods and services around a country, the lower costs are going to be, no question.
So we got lots of folks, you know, that don't have vehicles. But, you know, Interstate 70, Interstate 55, speaking of that, you know, when I'm up here, all everybody wants to talk about a lot of times is Interstate 70. They talk about, God almighty, all the truck traffic and all this. And there is, because I got grandkids that live in Columbia, actually. So I get on 70 every once in a while. And there is a lot of trucks on there. Thank goodness there's a lot of trucks on there. That means somebody might be making something, manufacturing something, but somebody may have a job. so on and so forth. But did you know there's more traffic in my district on Interstate 55, or more truck traffic on Interstate 55 than there is Interstate 70? Have you ever heard that before?
I think you've told me that before. But well, you don't have an Interstate 70 in your district.
No, but Interstate 55 between Sykes to Missouri and the Arkansas line has a lot more truck traffic on Interstate 70.
I see what you're saying. Yes. Yes, you have told me that.
You misunderstood what I said?
I misunderstood what you said.
Yeah. We have serious problems all over the place. If we had a G5 Galaxy airplane to drop off all the money we needed and parachute it down right over to Jefferson City Airport, I'm afraid that we have gotten so far behind on replacing our bridges and doing the things that we need to do that we'll never get caught up. I mean, they're just falling in disrepair all over the place. Let me give you an example. You know, we know how much obstructed traffic in people's lives and jobs and economic movement of goods that happens over on 44 when it floods, 44 down here at Rolla, stuff like that. Now, that's a flood that caused that bridge or that road to be unusable. But did you know that one engineer with a little yellow helmet on can be just like a flood on a bridge? That's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The engineer, now gotta visualize this, okay? I'll be the engineer. I put my little yellow helmet. Don't ever go under a bridge for them to prove to you that our bridges need work on. It'll scare you to death on a lot of them. Also, I don't want to scare you too much by saying that Interstate 70 is almost as old as I am. Now, take a really good look.
Well, it's not very old then, Senator.
See the little wrinkles up here and crow feet over here? Well, that's what that steel gets to looking like when it starts rusting, coming apart, getting pounded every day, so on and so forth. But if I got me a little yellow helmet on, had me one of the little special things that takes me under the bridge, I can close that bridge. It's been closed before you got here on some debates that we were having in highway funding in previous years. While I was standing here, a bridge got closed in Kansas City. A bridge got closed for over a year down in my district on U.S. Highway 62 for a year. So don't have to take a flood. A person with a little yellow helmet on can go, he's got a job to do, and he goes close that bridge. Now, can you imagine your wildest dreams what would happen if any bridge on Interstate 70 got closed between Wentzville and Lee Summit? That's a question.
I'm sorry, what was the question? I didn't hear that.
Can you imagine? Okay, well, I'm going to cover everything several times here before it's over, as long as you stay in there and talk to me. Can you imagine in your wildest dreams if a bridge on Interstate 70, because I know I'm going to use Interstate 70. I could use Interstate 55 down by Marston, but you probably really don't relate to Marston down there and all that. So I'll just say somewhere between Wentzville and where you get off there at Kingdom City to come to Jefferson City.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine what would happen to our interstate commerce and what would happen to Missouri side roads at that time?
It would be an enormous, enormous
it
interruption.
It would be chaos.
It would be a massive disruption of our traffic, no question. And actually, I'm glad the reason I think that you bring up I-70 is that part of my plan did include the funds for a rebuild of I-70. I-70, I think you mentioned this earlier in the inquiry, that 70% of the traffic that's coming through our interstates have neither a start nor an end point in Missouri. So we do have a lot of out-of-state traffic, which is why I acknowledge your point about having Missouri citizens pay the cost. I think that there are some ways to mitigate that. If we were to make an investment in general revenue, we would also be able to access some additional federal funds that we aren't accessing right now.
Okay, you mentioned general revenue again, and I have to say something when you say like general revenue again. I have to say again, anytime you're using general revenue to build roads and bridges, you are not having a user tax at that time. You're disproportionately putting the whole cost on Missourians and letting everybody else that uses our roads and bridges off the hook. But yet, when our people go to Nashville or go to Atlanta or anywhere, they're paying tremendously higher costs every time they stop and purchase fuel. So that's not reasonable.
Well, we wouldn't be completely removing the burden from folks, out-of-state folks, and that's why I say that we would be accessing additional federal dollars that would be coming from other states.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be an entire, but I acknowledge that point. And if there's a way to address that, I think that's why HCR 47 makes sense, and we can have that discussion. No question.
Well, I just want you to know that that discussion has been held for years here, and we're still just kicking the old proverbial showboat pork and bean can, because I like showboat pork and beans, man, I'm telling you. And I have to use that. I can't just use any old can, because you know how I eat showboat pork and beans? I just pop that little top, get me a spoon, and I spoon them babies out of there.
Well, it Senator,
that's the old proverbial showboat pork and bean can down the road.
Well, and I think that I expressed my frustration that the can was getting kicked down the road a few weeks ago here on the floor when we weren't able to have that discussion. So that's why when I saw the opportunity,
I wanted to make sure I heard that, but I wanted to make sure you had that discussion.
Absolutely, and I think that's where coming all the way back to HCR 47. I think that's a good first step. And you started your inquiry off with your belief that this was a good step in the right direction. We can kind of hash these out, and
actually,
I know we're going to have more conversations here.
Actually, I think I started off with, I'm glad that you're passionate about funding our roads and bridges.
Yes.
And I guess where I'm coming from is do you agree that people that use things should help pay for them?
Yeah, I generally agree that consumption taxes, there are some concerns when you talk about consumption taxes and the regressivity of consumption taxes, sales taxes. There's some concerns there. But in general, I like them much better than income taxes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. And I'm going to make an inquiry here in a minute. This is not going to be till noon. Maybe some other people, because you and you're not the only ones interested in transportation.
Nope. Lots of folks interested, I understand.
Yeah. But anyways, we have the best funding mechanism right now. Now, that don't mean that we can't improve somewhere. Okay, now you and I can agree on that, right? We might be able to improve somewhere on that. But just to make sure the listeners understand, this money that you, when you put your gas pump in your car, that does not come to general revenue.
That's
it
correct.
Goes into a fixed account.
The highway fund.
And we have the highway fund. And we have 6 volunteer commissioners that have to be approved by the Senate. They, in turn, make decisions by input from over 20 regional planning districts, which there's one in your district also. It could be 2 in your district. I know there's at least 1. There's a transportation...
Yeah, I think it's one.
You're part of it, because I've spoke to them before. I don't remember what the name of it is. But they have, like, maybe a county commissioner and a mayor and, you know, made up of maybe a business person and just, you know, maybe just a citizen, whatever. And they sit there and they say, and they always have a MoDOT person normally in their meeting, because I speak with this experience because in Poplar Bluff, before I ever came in the Senate, I was on the Ozark Regional Planning Commission's TAC, Transportation Advisory Council, for many years. And we had 5 counties, and it was 5 people from each county, and we sit down, and we would have meetings like every 90 days, and we'd all sit down and discuss what's happening to our roads and our bridges and our infrastructure inside our areas and how it's affecting us, safety, economic development, whatever it is. And we'd sit there, and before the year's out, we were tasked with giving our regional planning director what we thought was our top 2 or 3 transportation projects. It could be safety, whatever. It could be any of those things. And we all vote on it. There were 25 votes. And we would vote. So somebody from Butler County or Carter County, you would do your best to try to convince everybody else, hey, my issue is a little bit worse than your issue. Can we move up a notch or something, okay? So we'd sit there and we'd identify maybe 10, 15 projects that need to be done. Now, we probably knew that all of them weren't going to be done, but they're sure not going to be done if you don't get them in the STIP program. Right?
That's correct.
So we'd sit there and we'd battle that all out. And then there's always a MoDOT person sitting there, and just for questions and things we might want to ask about, well, how old is that bridge over there or something like that, you know. They had really no input other than that. They were just there listening. And then the director would take our recommendation annually to these highway commissioners, and they'd say, okay, this is the Ozark Regional Planning Commission's identified road needs, And I'm here to tell you, for anybody that says that MoDOT just ramrods everything down everybody's throats in their districts, in my district, it never happened. And I will tell you that most all the things we identified was taken in consideration and most of the time acted on just in a short period of time. And when I say short period of time, when you're talking about road funding, I'm talking about 5-10 years. That's a short period of time. So I just want to kind of like lay that out there a little bit, because if we didn't have those TAC commissions, then we'd have too much concentrated power, in my opinion, then. Then you get into regional people getting appointed to the commission, being one of the six commissioners, and then somebody wasn't from Butler County or Southeast Missouri, where three senators reside down there and a whole bunch of state representatives, then maybe we wouldn't be getting, you know, good representation. So, I don't recognize that writing, but anyway, wouldn't know that much anyway. But anyway, so I would feel definitely different if I didn't see the inner workings of local people planning their own highways and what they need to do with what we're doing with. So you and I are going to continue having more discussions on this.
Agreed.
I just want to leave you with this.
Okay.
In my years of being in business, you have to pay for stuff. And you have to have a way to do it that's fair, equitable, sustainable, and monies that you can count on. So that's one good thing that's allowed us is a good steady stream of revenue, even though it's 20th century purchasing power that we're operating on now, 21 years later. But if it wasn't for the foresight of Governor John Ashcroft in 1992, and those in the legislature, don't even know who they were, I don't even know what the political makeup was, they passed a 2 plus 2 plus 2 in 1992. It went up 2 cents in 92, 2 cents in 94, 2 cents in 96. I'd really hate to see where we're at if we didn't do all that and have that type of foresight. And that's what I'm talking about with courage sometimes to, you know, people vote, you know, do what we need to be done. But at any rate, I really feel good about how MoDOT has really increased their efficiency and their productivity, and I have the highest respect of the folks that go out there and work on those dangerous roads and bridges every day. But I've always been more of a proactive guy than a reactive guy. I like to go ahead and fix things before they break. I really appreciate the inquiry.
This is your inquiry, Senator.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate you accepting my inquiry.
Absolutely.
But you had somewhat of a little debate on transportation this year on the Senate floor.
We did, and I think this is an excellent segue to further discussion.
I like it. But anyway, don't forget, last year, we put the Missouri House of Representatives in charge of road funding. Thank you so much for your inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 9th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. May I inquire of the senator from the 5th?
Senator from the 5th. Senator from the 5th. Does not appear to be in the chamber. Senator 5th is in the chamber. Senator from the 5th, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 9th?
I do.
Senator from the 9th, you may proceed.
If we may, Senator, we'll go ahead. The senator here. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 1st.
I do, Mr. President.
Senator from the 1st, you may proceed.
Senator, I promise you this inquiry is going to be considerably less extensive than your prior one.
No problem, Senator. This is our first inquiry, I believe.
You know, that may very well be true. Yeah.
It's a great day.
It didn't occur to me. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad it's about an issue that's so important to you, so important to my constituents, and so important to our state. Obviously, transportation is not only an immense industry in Missouri, it's actually one of our top three, along with agriculture and tourism, largely, I think, because of just where we're situated between river, rail, and road. You know, Senator from Butler talked about courage, and the reality is that the place where we find ourselves in on our road funding is many years in the making, and it's going to take many years to get ourselves back to where we need to be. I don't think there's any question about that, and I also don't think there's any question. Some of those toughest years under current policy are going to be the 5 to 7 years in front of us right now, where we really we don't have a plan to get there from here until we have some bonds retire in the middle part of the next decade. And given that, and this is just, I'm not doing this to be partisan, but, you know, given the importance of the issue, given the high-profile nature of the problem, I don't know, I just might have thought that the word transportation or road might have appeared somewhere in the State of the State address this year, but it did not. And, you're welcome to tell me if you've been in communication with the governor's office, if they've got a plan, if they've got a proposal, and I get that there are no easy answers, but, it's such an important issue, I would have anticipated some kind of public articulation of policy by this point, 4 months, pardon the pun, down the road, and into this administration. And feel free to tell me if I've just missed that article in the Post-Dispatch.
No, I think, Senator, I won't try to speak for the governor's office. The conversations that I have had directly with the governor has indicated that he understands the importance of this,
sure,
of this issue, wants, like many other citizens in the state, to solve this issue. But I won't try to, I don't want to say good or bad what his involvement has been. I think that he's going to be very open to the results of the conversation we're trying to have.
And I'm not sitting here pointing fingers. I'm just saying, at some point, I would have thought before now, but at some point, we need a plan. We need a plan. I appreciate your concurrent resolution and effort to try to get us off dead center legislatively, and I know there's an executive branch component to that, and I'm happy to hear their willingness to participate in that. But, it's like a really big deal. I mean, it's really important. Not only is it one of our three biggest industries, all of our other industries depend on it, and we need to get it right. And I'll just say, going to the point that the senator from Butler made, it probably took a lot of courage for Governor John Ashcroft, working across the aisle with a legislature that at the time was majority Democratic in both chambers, for a sitting Republican governor to actually work through and pitch and propose and sell a voter-approved tax increase to get us through the 1990s. But can you imagine where we would be if he hadn't had that courage and shown that leadership?
Well, I think that if he had not gone down that route, I think that we would have, the conversation we're having now would have been forced to occur even sooner.
Well, and I'm not so sure. I mean, part of the reason we're here is not the fact of Amendment 3. Part of the reason we're where we are on K-12 funding is the fact of Amendment 3. But it's not that we passed Amendment 3. It's how we managed the anticipated revenue from Amendment 3. We basically took 20 years of anticipated revenue and blew it in 10. And we are where we are. I was not in the legislature when that happened. I have been here for some proposals, and there are some that I have voted to place on the ballot. There are some I voted against placing on the ballot, just depending on the proposal. But it's going to take some real leadership and some real courage to get it done. And we can do that strictly legislatively. I just think that it would be unfortunate if we didn't have some involvement from the executive branch as well. And to this point, I haven't heard what I would have expected to hear.
I understand, Senator. And my frustrations, obviously, I was here on the body a couple weeks ago, actually maybe a month ago, talking about my frustrations that the conversation at large has not progressed beyond where it's at. And as I saw, you know, HCR 47, I see as an opportunity to kickstart that conversation again,
right,
heading into the next legislative session. As like you, I welcome the feedback of the governor. I think this is a good step forward.
I agree. It's the best we've, well, it's the only that we've seen this year. And I'm sure it's not all that either of us would hope it to be, but it is a good start, and I appreciate your bringing it forward. Thank you, Senator.
Thanks, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 9th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. May I inquire of the Senator from the 5th?
Senator from the 5th? Do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 9th?
Yes.
Senator from the 9th, you may proceed.
Okay, finally. I'm not sure what happened, but it's all good. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I like your seersucker.
Thank you.
Why didn't you wear the whole outfit?
You know, it's very difficult for women to find the entire suit typically for seersuckers. So most often, you know, jackets are available, and then that's what we...
I had to get out the club this year.
Did you?
Yeah, because...
You didn't wear a seersucker not one week this week.
Yeah,
this year.
It's too big for me now.
Oh,
so
good
for you.
I
didn't want to have to take it in, and I didn't want to purchase another one.
I said,
I'm out the club.
Well, you'll have to rejoin. You have to go and have it altered and rejoin the club next year. But you've been enjoying, I'm sure, the riveting discussion on transportation here, of course, something that's important to all of us. Right. But there's been a lot of work, of course, going on in our offices.
Yeah, this year.
This year,
I've had the opportunity to work with three talented young individuals, brilliant students, students from MU, one from MU, another from MU, and another one from Truman.
Right.
Bridget, if you can stand, if you're in here. Bridget, she was outstanding. She's very, very hard worker, very hard worker. Bridget this summer will be interning with a non-for-profit organization in Spain for 6 weeks. Now, that is phenomenal. Bridget, thanks for all that you have contributed to the Fix Senatorial District. Another one of my interns was Taylor. Taylor, let me tell you something. Everybody needs to watch out for her. Taylor has been selected to receive the prestigious Harriet S. Truman Scholarship and the Pickering Scholarship, which will pay for her graduation her graduate program after graduation. She's going to be working in the D.C. area with your congressman an intern, Congressman Cleaver. So she's doing outstanding things, and I just want to thank her as well for all of her hard work and dedication. I have brilliant interns that are working with me. And then I have one more, though. And I'm sure many of you have had the opportunity to meet this guy, Henrio. He will be traveling to Atlanta, Georgia, to intern with two elite bodybuilders this summer. Now, this guy here, wherever there's food, he's there. But then you ask yourself, how do you stay so fit? He said, that's because I eat a lot. And I, for the life of me, I never understood that. But Henrio, thanks for all that you have contributed to the Fit Senatorial District as well. And you guys will be surely missed. The interns I have worked with, they've worked very hard this session, and I just want to say I appreciate each and every one of you, and it would not go unnoticed throughout the years. So thank you.
Well, I'm not sure whether we can make direct comments to...
Well, I did.
Right now.
I didn't get dabbled.
So I'll be very quick so that we can move on, of course. But I, too, had wonderful, wonderful interns this year. And I will say that these are probably three of the best interns that I've had clearly in 1 year. So, yeah, but I mean that. Not that you don't. But I do. I have three. I had three seniors this year. And I had one, Zakiya Marshall, who was wonderful from Northwest Missouri State University, who is from my home district. Kayana Ayetemiyi, who's from Southeast Missouri State University. She happens to belong to, or live in the district, from the senator from Butler. And I have Brendan Simpson, who's a senior at MU in Columbia, who happens to be from Arnold, Missouri, from the senator from Jefferson's district. And I was so excited to have them. They have done an excellent job, and I wish them all the best as they proceed forward.
Yeah, that's great. So, Senator,
thank you for giving me the opportunity to you know, engage you in terms of what we have been able to see coming out of talented young men and women.
I agree.
Throughout
I agree.
The universities.
Right. We want to help them and encourage them, and so I'm looking for bright futures, of course, for all of them, and I wish all of them well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on House Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 47? Senator from Barrie, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Barrie?
I do.
Senator from Barrie, you may proceed.
Senator, I think there's a lot of good-looking people here when there's seersucker today. And we,
I noticed an increased number.
An increased number, that's right. We had a picture taken, a photograph, at 9:45 this morning, but unfortunately there was three, I think, senators that...
We didn't want to appear elitist because we're all-inclusive.
That's right.
We're a family, so... Oh,
it's, yes, it's a very loving family. But anyway, upon recess, morning recess, we are going to retake the picture, and you concur with that, of course.
I do, and I don't know if that allows some of them that forgot their suits at the cleaners enough time to go get them or not. They'll just have to plan a little bit better next year, I think.
Yeah. You know, seersucker has a long history of going back to the United States and Washington, you know, for they started wearing seersucker before air conditioning came in because
yes.
It was so hot in Washington, D.C.
Aren't these comfortable?
Oh, they're very comfortable, very comfortable.
I feel like I could be in session from now until we end Friday at 6 p.m. I feel so
comfortable. And never change, yeah.
You think we'll be doing that?
It may happen. But anyway, I thank you for the inquiry, and upon recess, we will have our picture retaken again.
And we'll have a lot bigger group.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
Thank you for the inquiry.
Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the senator from the 9th.
Senator from the 9th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Butler.
I do.
Senator from Butler, you may proceed.
Did remind me of who you had from my district.
I have Kayana Ayetemiyi, who is a intern. She's a wonderful intern in my office. She happens to be from your district.
Yeah.
So I had planned on, which is why I mentioned it before the end of session and probably today or tomorrow, bringing my intern, of course, by your office and the office of the senator from Jefferson so that they can meet the wonderful interns we have in the Capitol.
That'd be great.
Our corresponding districts.
All right. That'd be great. Thank you very much, Senator.
Be happy to.
Appreciate it.
Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the senator from San Francisco.
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Butler?
I do.
Senator from Butler, you may proceed.
You know, Senator, this is our fifth year here.
Yes, it is. We got 3 days left of our fifth session.
Yes, it is. And, you know, most of the time it's been really, really enjoyable. I mean, all of our colleagues and stuff, I've enjoyed it a lot.
And I feel like a great sense of pride and responsibility that we've had the honor of serving our constituents and the state in the various issues out on this floor.
That's right. You know, this is 5 years that you and I know how often transportation has been talked about and voted upon and all that. So, you know, last year and the year before when I was carrying transportation bills, you know, a lot of senators and representatives, when they'd go home, a lot of people said, what are you guys going to do about our roads and our bridges? Did you hear that very much in your district?
It's a constant conversation. Anytime you go to a chamber event or to some of the regional planning commission's events, I mean, that's the probably the highest topic of conversation. And you know what's frustrating is that the institutional knowledge or the history of this body, do you remember Representative Rod Jetton?
I do.
Do you remember that
he walked all the way from Marble Hill to Jefferson City? I think he was the one.
Yeah, that was one of his claims to fame.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, and do you remember that he put a blue ribbon panel together to study our transportation issues in the state?
I do remember that.
So how many times are we going to study this before we do something about it?
Well, it's you know probably being from Poplar Bluff, like you and I are, you know, I really enjoyed those showboat pork and beans, all right? I already told you I just pop that little top off. Well, I bet you, being the fisherman you are, I bet you had those Vienna sausages in them.
Vienna sausages and the cans of pork and beans. That was our staple when we were camped out on Black River there.
Telling you, you could catch some crappie if you had a can of that old proverbial can. Now, if you were going to kick a can down the road on transportation funding, which can would you kick down the road? Would you kick, now you got to listen to all your choices here. It's like multiple choice, okay? Would you kick a can of Showboat pork and beans or Van Camps, or would you kick barbecue Vienna sausages or just plain ones down the proverbial road of road funding? Which can would you kick?
Well, I'm trying to see which one symbolizes what. I'm not quite getting the visual here, because I like both of them, and I just do not kick those cans. I'd rather, you know.
But if you were to have to kick it, you know, we've been kicking the old can down the old road for a long time. So, which, just select one. It's kind of telling me a little bit about you.
Well, let's just throw those in the trash can and let's pick up what we know is really good for our state.
All right.
And stand up and make a decision about how we're going to fund it. Get our fuel tax up to a level that's commensurate with the day and time we live in, and then index it so we're not coming back to the subject matter on an ongoing basis.
Did you know how much the 2 plus 2 plus 2 was going to cost people? First year was going to cost them about $6 a year.
And then I think it maxed out maybe $11.
Well, actually, I got $10 if you only got 20 miles a gallon.
Okay.
But anyways, average about $6 to $8 per year. And you know who owns all these roads and bridges? It's not a for-profit company anywhere.
No, there's no financial gain for any special interest group that we're seeing with some other bills.
It's the citizens that own this great thousands of miles of roads. It's a great asset, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it is. It's a tremendous asset for this state.
What do you think we pay for cell phones? You know, we use those. That's a user item.
I would say the average family spends $100, $150 a month on their cell
phone. You think it's a pretty good bargain? If you have a car, now if you don't have a car, if you're not buying fuel or diesel or whatever, or gasoline.
Cost. There's no cost to you.
You're not paying nothing. But don't you think it's a pretty good deal that if you pay $100 a month for a cell phone, $1,200 a year, don't you think it's a pretty good deal to pay around $10 a year to keep from hitting chug holes and safety of your family and all that kind of stuff?
The greatest bargain you'll ever make, best dollar you'll ever spend.
I mean, cell phones are a very important asset.
You know, if you don't have good roads and bridges and you have a chunk hole, what's the average cost of a front end alignment or tire that's blown out or some of those maintenance items that develop because
of
bad roads?
Yeah. Well, how long ago has it been since Rod Jetton appointed that Blue Ribbon Commission, you know? Can you guess?
I would say it's about 15 years ago.
15 years ago. Boy, that got us, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what did we get out of that?
I don't know. There could have been
something. Did any new taxes, did any new revenues develop from that? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we haven't adjusted the rate since 1996. I mean, it defies common sense to think that you can use 20th century funding to pay for 21st century needs.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's 20th century purchasing power. Op-ed after op-ed has been written about it. Testimony after testimony after testimony has been written about it. We got highway contractors been merging and collapsing and having to go to other states to do work. We've got union workers, construction workers that having to retrain themselves from running an excavator or a bulldozer or an electrician or a carpenter or a steel worker or whatever. They're having to go back and retrain to be maybe a nurse, or we're taking people out of the industry. If that old G5 Galaxy flew over Jefferson City and dropped that big pile of money off.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure we get all of our work done in our lifetimes, to be honest with you, because we're losing. You know, we're replacing maybe 100 bridges a year right now. And not all of them's big bridges. Everybody thinks about a big bridge, you know.
There's a lot of those box cover bridges,
different things like that. And we're falling behind 100 to 200 bridges a year. Do you think a bridge is pretty important?
They're exceptionally important. I mean, that's the only way to get across that stream or valley or whatever it may be. I mean, that's the only way to get it done unless you want to drive miles in a different direction.
Has MoDOT ever asked you to go under a bridge and take a look at a bridge?
No, but I have, and it's not a pretty sight.
Well, and, you know, they've done a great job keeping up with those. You know, considering, you know, I tell you what, There's a lot of people in this room that's been in business for a long time. You and I have been in business. And if you go looking back at it, if they really haven't had any purchasing power increase since 1996, they've done a marvelous job.
They've done a tremendous job.
They've done a tremendous job. Because, you know, 1996 is 21 years ago. Now, let's roll the reel back just a little bit here. You know, in 1992, if we would have put indexing on that, you and I would not be standing here, and we wouldn't have to have a blue ribbon panel, and we wouldn't have to have this resolution. We would just be kind of like taking care of business. And motor fuel user taxes right now would be about 25 cents a gallon instead of 17. It would have been graduated in, because I went back and did the math. You do have to remember, though, that I walked uphill both ways in snow in that little school I went to. So so anyway, it'd be about 25, 26 cents a gallon. And we wouldn't have had to revisit this again. We would have stayed up with inflation.
Right.
However, we didn't do it.
Well, that's some of the frustrating things that I found when people ask me when I'm back home, what's the biggest surprise that you realized once you got into Jeff City? And so many times we create a cliff. We do something and we don't think about it anymore until we get to a cliff and realize, uh-oh, we should have done something different. And that's where we're at with our transportation. If we would have indexed that many years ago.
Hey, Mr. President, I can't hear. And I want to hear.
The Senate will come to order. The Senate will come to order for the senators to be able to hear one another in debate. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you.
But that is probably my biggest.
I hate to mess up that important debate back there behind me, but I couldn't hear the senator from St. Genevieve.
Well, that's been my biggest surprise, is that we have allowed ourselves so many times on so many issues to get to a cliff and then try to have to deal with it. We've got to do a better job of having some type of programs, whether they're sunsetted and reviewed on a periodic basis, but at least put them in a position where they're ongoing, they're sustainable, and they're effective.
Yeah. Well, do you feel pretty good about how our commissioners operate and the funding of MoDOT and the fact that we got citizens looking into that and it don't get all scrambled up into our general revenue and those funds stay where they're supposed to be and directed where they're supposed to be?
I do. I really feel like they've worked very hard to manage the funds that they've been given to work with. I know how much they work with the counties. It seemed like this year more than ever we've needed to call the MoDOT office to get help with local issues in various counties in my district. They've been very responsive to it and worked very hard to successfully fix those issues. And so MoDOT, I feel like, has done a tremendous job of being successful.
My microphone got turned. Oh, there we go. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I know why I got turned off. Thank you. Anyway.
But MoDOT has done a great job with the resources they have, yes.
Well, one other thing. Do you have a Transportation Advisory Council? You have a Regional Planning Commission in your district?
Yes, we do.
Do they have people that work on transportation issues?
That is a agenda item most frequently on their list of things to talk about, yes.
How big area does your Regional Planning Commission take in?
Several counties, I think six, maybe seven counties.
Six to seven counties? Wow. So your Regional Planning Commission goes outside your district then, I guess.
Yes, there's some areas, yes. Yeah, Perry County, St. Jean County, St. Francis, yeah. Madison.
Because one of your counties is actually
in Senator from
Ozark
Capes.
And in Senator from Cape, that's right.
Yes, yes.
Well, anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate your inquiry.
You're quite welcome. And it's a subject that, you know, we've been talking about a long time. It's not like it hasn't been discussed almost on an annual basis. And
yeah.
We at some point, and I like your words, are going to have the courage to make a hard decision on finding the right funding mechanism, which traditionally has been the fuel tax, and that's the direction I think all the conversations that's been had is the most appropriate way to go.
Well, only for 93 years, you can't sit down yet, only for 93 years have we had this funding mechanism.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much. Mr. President.
Senator from Butler, what perks your eyes?
I'd like to inquire the Senator from Franklin.
Senator from Franklin, do you yield to inquire from the Senator from Butler? Senator from Butler, you may proceed.
Hey, there we are. I'm here.
Good morning. I had a look at the clock there. It's 11:55.
Actually, yeah, it's getting close to bean time.
Ooh.
Some point, yeah.
Talk about lunchtime?
Yeah, bean time would be lunchtime.
Oh,
yeah,
bean time. Yeah. Not
to be associated with dinner time, which would be fish time.
That's
but
right, fish
bean
time.
We're gonna have beans for lunch and fish for supper.
You know, you and I have similar paths on all that fishing and eating and hunting and all that.
Yeah,
my
stature reflects my desire to have beans.
Yeah. I'm a professional eater also, by the way. I don't know if you can tell by looking.
I do that very well, yes. Yeah. So.
Well, do you want to talk about any specific issues that's
got to do with prevailing wage
and different things like that?
I've listened to the conversation, and we talked a little bit about the road conditions, and I think that in the conversation, you've probably talked about the number of route miles that MoDOT has to maintain.
Well, it's a lot.
It's
I didn't necessarily 30-some
thousand, 36,000 yeah. miles.
34,000.
34,000 right miles. Yeah. The county, then, on the other hand, has around 76,000 miles that the county maintains.
Yep.
And then I think cities and municipalities probably maintain somewhere in the neighborhood of 26,000 miles of roads that they maintain. Now, I do agree. You and I agree on transportation funding.
Yep.
We agree about the mechanism in which we should do it. I think a user fee is the best, most appropriate way to take care of this problem, and I do believe it's going to take us agreeing to have the courage to step forward, put that out there, and move that forward, because that's the way we've been doing it for 94 years.
Yeah.
But I'm going to talk about one particular thing, if you will allow me.
Yeah, can I answer that just real fast?
Yes.
And then you go on to that next thing?
Yes.
You know, the Senate moved a bill to the House of Representatives last year, and I want to thank everybody that listened to all that debate for the years, even previous to me standing here as a senator, trying to move transportation funding. But we just had the courage to send it over to the House with plenty of time for them. I took it over, went through two committees over there. The last committee I took it to was unanimous in moving it to the floor, getting it passed. And it was to go to the vote of the people. They wouldn't even take it up for
a
vote.
Yeah, that's shocking.
Huh?
That's shocking.
I mean, have we gotten to the point to where I don't think we should take everything to the vote of the people, don't get me wrong. But something that important that we can't get to movement in the first place? I found it really shocking when, and you know, the response back to me, well, you know, Senator, we didn't think we had the votes. Do you find it kind of shocking that I moved that bill through two House committees?
Well, I find it shocking that we got it through the Senate.
Right.
And we were able to get it through the Senate, and so it seemed like they couldn't get the votes supposedly couldn't get the votes, so I am a little shocked about that.
Yeah. Well, I am too, because, you know, the folks back home, and everybody says, well, Senator, it wasn't going to pass, because, and then what everybody keeps talking about is, well, we already tried that a couple of years previous. That was a different way of funding highways and bridges.
Yeah,
was a sales tax.
Right.
And at that time, it was thought, and I supported it at that time, because we need to get something done about our roads and bridges. But that was an unfair comparison to say that folks wouldn't vote to adjust the motor fuel user
tax. I think you made some very key points that if voters of this state understood, first of all, I think that as I polled my district, I think the majority of people in my district do believe that there's a transportation funding shortfall. They just disagree about where the money should come from. But when you point out the fact of the fact that there is probably 50% of the miles traveled on our states are traveled by out-of-state citizens, and whether you want to tax our citizens or be able to collect additional revenue from people that are using our roads, deteriorating our roads and bridges, why wouldn't we want to adjust the motor fuel user fee in order to be able to collect that revenue from those individuals that are using our roads? Because when we go to Pennsylvania...
Other
states, we're obviously paying for their roads and bridges on the amount of motor user fuel that we're buying when we're there, and we're missing that opportunity. And I know you're familiar with the Interstate Fuel Tax Administration,
Absolutely.
IFTA, and how that we're only able to collect the amount of revenue that we charge as a
motor
fuel tax.
That's right.
And so whether it's 17 cents per gallon, or truckers that are coming through here, they're going to pay 17 cents per gallon, or they could be paying, if we could increase that, they could be paying their additional proportionate share for the roads and the bridges that they're damaging for that travel. So I think it's ridiculous to think that, again, I'm okay without, we can do another study. I think we're going to come to the same conclusion. But it's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Now, we will probably come to the same result, and I think the result's going to be a motor fuel user fee is going to be the best mechanism to address transportation funding in the future. But I'm willing to go through that study.
Well, I just want to say one thing. Well, you know, we've already did that blue panel. I mean, and I guess we can have a platinum panel maybe.
We had
a blue panel. We had a blue ribbon panel. We had a blue ribbon panel that the senator from San Francisco said a while ago.
Right.
That was by a previous legislator. And I guess we can go to a platinum ribbon panel and really expect...
What comes after? If you win the blue ribbon at the fair, is there another one?
Well, I think it's... Well, I just had to say something I thought might be past a blue ribbon. It'd be a platinum panel.
The platinum ribbon, yes.
Yeah. You know, I think that's where it's at. I just want to correct on one thing. You said driving 50% of the miles. It's 50% of the fuel purchases.
50% of the fuel purchases.
Yeah.
Well, so you could, again, you'd even estimate that they may be even driving more than 50% of the miles. But that is, and that's an important distinction, that if they're purchasing at least 50% of the fuel, obviously, yeah, that burden, they should be sharing in the burden to take care of the roads and bridges. Because this, as we all know, that we are kind of the key being located in the center of the United States, that we are the kind of the gateway in which people are going to, come through this state.
So, well, you know, a lot of people say, well, Senator, you know, down in Oklahoma, they have 17 cents a gallon. Has anybody drove in Oklahoma lately?
I have drove through there, and I can promise you, for me to drive from Big Cabin, Oklahoma, down to Enid, Oklahoma, I can't tell you the amount of money it cost me to travel on there, but it's a lot more than 17 cents per gallon.
Well, you still have to pay the 17
cents. You still have to pay the 17 cents.
It's not like.
And then you pay the toll to get from point A to point B.
It's like in lieu of. It's not in lieu of.
In lieu of, So you pay, pay twice.
And, and I've already figured out that some people might pay $10 a year. A year.
Additional fee, for good roads and bridges.
Yeah, and people will pay $60, $70, $100 a month for a cell phone for convenience and safety and keeping up with the
kids. I think, again, I don't want to belabor the point, but I think one of the important distinctions when we had the ice storm previously this year...
Hey, Mr. President, hang on a second. I can't hear again. And those guys...
The Senate will come to order. Senate will come to order. The senators can hear one other in debate. Senators, you may proceed.
But I will say this, that when MoDOT went out and sent employees out and they took care of that ice storm, the cost associated with that was around, to citizens, was about $2.
Per person.
Per person. And you can't go to Walmart, or I'm not advocating Walmart or any other place, and buy a bag of rock salt and do the amount of
$8.
Work. $8, whatever that was.
And you can still go out there and put it in yourself.
Someone's trying to get your attention.
Poking me?
Yeah. Poke it up. Yeah. Go ahead. I'll wait.
Are you trying to kill him just on the transportation? Because I'm good with him. I'm good with him.
I mean, whoever's the man, it's up to you.
Well, Senator, back to our conversation, I think that was the type of value that's provided to motorists and people throughout this state that they're really unaware with. And so asking them to pay, you know, potentially a few more cents in a user fee, what I would call a instead of a tax, it's a user fee, I think people would be willing to do that for that type of service that they do receive. And again, we do have to address this issue. But if I could...
Let's move to the next topic then.
The next topic. I mean, one of the things I think we're going to have a discussion, hopefully at some point in time, we're going to talk about prevailing wage.
Okay.
And on those 76,000 miles of roads and those 26,000 miles that the cities maintain, we could make those dollars go a little farther,
when we address the prevailing wage issues here in the state. And I know you live in a rural area.
Yes.
And you have places where...
Are you a cosmopolitan guy down in Franklin?
I would consider myself to live in a rural area. But I do know that there's places that you probably travel throughout the counties you represent that have bridge modifications, box culverts that need to be done.
Right. Oh.
And the cost associated with having a contractor that lives locally in your county to bid a box culvert for a county or a municipality... that prevailing wage escalates the cost of those projects, and some people would estimate it could be as high. Again, I'm not saying that it is, but
we don't know what size of bridge is.
Depending on the size of it, but it could be a cost that would be as much as potentially 20 to 30% more cost associated with because it's prevailing wage, as to opposed to what those contractors would be willing to do that work for because they live in that county and that's what they typically pay their wages.
Right.
And we're gonna have that conversation. So if we could spend that money and stretch those dollars. Again, this is not associated with anything that has federal dollars attached to it, so the majority of the roads and bridges that MoDOT maintains are not affected by that because Davis-Bacon wages ultimately trump when federal money is associated with that.
Right.
But on lettered roads and on sidewalks and streets that in the municipalities that are maintained, prevailing wage is an issue that if we want, if we have a funding shortfall, that's one area that we can get some considerations.
That would be huge.
That actually, and I think there's, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about it, but putting a proposal together, if we're going to talk about prevailing wage, that says, you know what, as long as you pay the average wage in the county, we can, and we know what that average wage is based upon the Missouri Economic Research, we could say that if you paid the average wage, that would be the floor. And I think people, it would still save a lot of money. It would stretch those dollars further, and we'd get more roads taken care of. We'd probably have more paved roads in some of these counties that are struggling to maintain their roads simply because they don't have the funds.
Well, I tell you, I shouldn't say all the counties. I'm just going to speak for my district. They all have funding issues because, you know what? Those cities and counties down there have been splitting 30% since 1996. Of the revenue that we bring in from motor fuel user taxes.
Right.
Okay? And the counties, we've already talked about that it's plateaued. And that's not really the argument. It's plateaued. But the fact of the matter is, it's not really going to go up that much. It never has. And since the Blue Ribbon panel 15 years ago, according to the, approximate, he didn't know exactly, but it's been a long time, nothing's been done. Nothing's been done. We had to go borrow some money. He pointed that out, the senator from 23rd. Had to go out and do some bonding. I'm not sure where we'd be at if we wouldn't have done that. So, the fact of the matter is, MoDOT has a plan. They only go up to a certain percent of what their expected revenue to retire those type of obligations. But, the issue is, these counties out here, a lot of rural counties, they have a lot of gravel roads. I have miles and miles and miles of gravel roads. And they have to go out and buy these motor graders, cost $200,000 to $300,000 a piece. But yet, their revenue, the part that they're sharing with the cities, which is about 15% for a county and 15% for the cities of that 30%, well, their purchasing power is like almost nothing anymore. And so they've been experiencing increases in labor and all the things we talked about. Now, one thing I want to agree with you, you said it'll save about 20 to 30% on a prevailing wage job. And I agree 100% with you. Now, I don't agree when people say it's 50% or it's 60%. I don't agree with all that.
There is a number that obviously there's a savings to be generated. But let me use your example of the motor grader operator. If you've got a guy that works for the county in Butler County that – there are very few roads in Franklin County are not paved. We're a first-class county. But we do have a few that we've got motor grader operators going. And if you work for the county, what do you think the wage for in Butler County for a motor grader operator is, just off the top of your head?
Right now?
Yeah.
I would say probably $16 an hour, probably.
$16. Well,
that's a guess.
That's a guess. So let's just say, for the sake of saying that, maybe he's a great motor grader operator, works for the county, and he's making $20 an hour.
Okay.
And so he goes out and he grades road for the county day in, day out.
Yep.
There's no prevailing wage requirement on county employees that are working for the county maintaining county roads.
Okay.
But the minute that the county says, you know what, we no longer can maintain that road, and we're going to have to put that out for bid,
right,
and we're going to have contractors come in and bid for that,
right,
what do you think the wage is in Butler County to pay that motor grader operator is now?
Well, I can, on a prevailing wage?
On prevailing wage.
Oh, it'd probably be 40.
On state prevailing wage.
Probably 40 to 45 an hour.
Well, I can tell you, I probably will pull the...
That's a guess.
It's a guess, but I can pull the numbers, and I believe it's probably going to be closer to be north of $50 an hour.
Well, and I'm not really, you got to add all the bennies and everything.
That's
else
right, because you add, because the prevailing wage includes the benefits. And so the benefits for an operating engineer in most places throughout this state typically run about $25 per hour for benefits.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden the citizens in Butler County, because they have contracted out as opposed to having their own personnel do the work,
right,
they're forced to pay a inflated prevailing wage that doesn't represent the average county wage.
Right.
And truly, again, so if you can, if you're paying one guy to grade roads at $20 an hour and you're paying another guy to do it at 50, how many, again, this could be a mathematical question, how many feet of road can you get, graded for $1,000?
Now, I've already qualified. I used to walk uphill both ways in the snow, so I have my pulling calculator out here if I have to do all
that. I threw that out there, but it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that if you've got a guy that's being paid 50 and a guy that's being paid 20,
yeah,
that is a
150%
increase,
right,
on wages.
And so, then you got Social Security matching, you got all the other,
right,
stuff, you got the federal unemployment.
So
the
guy making 50 is going to have to do 150% more grading than the guy that's doing it for the county.
Right.
And so I don't know what that computes to in the cost, but I'm telling you that there is a savings to be generated.
Absolutely.
And when we have funding issues, we need to be looking at prevailing wage and how it affects the rural counties on lettered roads, municipalities, cities, and all those things. And we're going to probably someday we're going to get to have that conversation,
yeah,
as to probably. But I wanted to interject that on the transportation.
Well,
because
I think
it's
important. A big part of it. It's a big part,
it's a
of,
big
it.
Part of it. Now, there is a level of expertise that's required to run some of the, you know, we talked about these heavy highway contractors, and I'm, you know, glad that we have them. And again, some of the expertise and the level of that they're worth the amount of money we pay them to run some of the equipment.
Yeah.
But there are situations where that's protected by federal dollars,
right,
that state prevailing wage does not need to be required in Butler County and Franklin County and other counties throughout that state that says we should be able to pay the average wage in that county and not an inflated wage.
I got a question for you kind of,
yeah,
on top of that. You know, I explained earlier, you know, we're losing our operators, you know, our excavators and bulldozers and steel workers, and they're all, you know, haven't had a whole lot to do. We're having to go to other states and do work. We're having to mobilize. You know what mobilizing is.
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't realize what that term is. Some do. Senator from New York.
The term of demobilize. You know, mobilize and demobilize.
And you demobilize.
And
demobilize. A lot of our construction
too.
Companies,
yeah,
have done a lot of consolidations and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you and I, we really didn't know each other until we met up here a couple of years ago, right? You didn't know my brother.
Well, I did. When you were elected, I was over in the House. And so when I knew your name, and I did have a chance to come to you because I knew.
But you knew my brother.
I knew your brother and was affiliated with him,
right,
through the utility contracting. And so,
right,
we got to know each other more than when I got over here in this
because
chamber.
We were sort of competitors.
Yes.
And
well,
business.
We actually had. I had actually done some contracting work with your brother.
Oh, we did both.
So we did
we
both.
Probably
we were
all
competitors.
Kinds of stuff.
We
probably
and
did
we
work
worked together.
Right.
So, yeah.
But my question is though, you can't just go down to the local staffing agency and say, you know what, I need a backhoe operator that can dig around gas lines and electric lines and right.
No.
I mean, it takes. You know.
It takes years of expertise and training for that.
Experience. You
yes.
Know?
Experience.
And so you can't do that. So we're talking about, I am worried, I think we're so far behind the old proverbial eight ball right now. Again, if that G5 Galaxy airplane dropped all that money off down here, over at the Jefferson City Airport, at a low altitude drop with a parachute, just full of billions, all right, I still don't think we get caught up.
No,
because
no, you're right. I mean, and now we talk about another problem.
It's not even a money problem.
It's not a money problem. It's a manpower problem.
Manpower problem.
It is absolutely a manpower problem.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I appreciate it. I just, as I listen to the conversation, I just wanted to take the opportunity to talk a little bit about another way that we can, maybe as we have these conversations, that we can stretch those dollars, transportation dollars, a little further in some of the more rural areas throughout the state. So I appreciate you allowing me to kind of get in and engage in this.
You know, the senator of the 23rd, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, he said that we're going to have a debate on transportation on this Senate floor. Well, you know, we're about 48 hours, or we're about, 53 hours and 45 minutes, something like that, from not being here the rest of the year, unless we go into special session somewhere.
Right.
And I just kind of wanted to make sure that the senator from the 23rd got an opportunity to visit about transportation and talk more than just, you know, hooking up another panel and having another government thing and doing all that stuff, you know.
Well,
appointing all these
I would
people.
Hope that we would be, if this panel does occur, that we would be a part of that panel and part of that discussion. And
well, I would hope so.
I would think, because both of us, again, I served as transportation chairman of the House for 2 years, and fortunately I have followed you in the chair of transportation here in the Senate, and you and I are very passionate about transportation funding. And
you
so,
were my vice chairman.
That's right. That is correct. So I've been around transportation for
and
some
that's
time.
Right. And I still serve on your committee.
That's right.
And I'm honored to be on your committee.
Well, I appreciate it. I was honored to serve with you and be your vice chair during this whole time, too. So.
Well, I'm just going to end it with this, because you're probably going to be my last inquiry.
Okay.
Okay? I'm going to end it with this. So you always say that, get everybody ready to go. So I'm going to end it with this. Fact of the matter is, we have roads and bridges. We've got to have them. Somehow you got to pay for them. So what is the most fair way there is to pay for them? And that is the people that use them. And we have other people that use our highways and bridges other than Missourians, right?
That's right.
And when we travel over in Oklahoma, when we travel in Illinois, we're paying 30, 40, 50 cents a gallon sometimes to utilize their roads, okay? So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about that cost that you were talking about.
Right.
But I'm really concerned also about our cities and counties and their purchasing power, because they haven't had any kind of an increase in all those years either.
You're absolutely correct.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
President,
does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
I would like to inquire of the senator from the...
Senator from the 4th. Senator from the 4th. If you do second read, Mike, I'll go down. Senator from the 4th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 14th. Senator, 14th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator.
Good evening. Good morning.
I always say good morning. Do you know why I always say good morning?
Why is that?
Because my favorite pals, who are postal workers, who I hang out with from time to time, senior and junior, George, they're both Georges, and they always say good morning, so that's why I say good morning all the time. In any case, I wanted to let you know that there are people who are from my district today who are impacted by the radioactive waste in the landfill. They are out on the Capitol lawn right now advocating.
Oh, they're here today.
Yes, they're here today. These are moms, some of which happen to be pro-life, some of which have lost family members and children, and they have pictures and all that. So I want to encourage you to at least go out and say hi, okay. And let them know that I did not intentionally stop your bill, but... It's for them.
Things happen all the time.
I wanted to have that conversation as well as the one I'm about to talk about. It has nothing to do with this bill, but I know that there are entities who are working against Senate Bill 22. I know that for a fact. People have taken pictures. We have the recon going in the entire Capitol at this point where folks are just tracking these lobbyists and where they are. But it's interesting to note, when you look at Missouri Ethics and you look at the lobbyists who are working against this,
Senator,
I'm not too sure who they're representing.
Forgive me, Senate Bill 22 is your bill, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, it's the buyout bill.
Sorry.
So I'm not sure who they're representing. And later on today, I'm going to call Moethics and ask, can you go through a law firm like Lathrop & Gage and not specifically have on your principal list who Lathrop & Gage actually represents? For example, does Lathrop & Gage actually represent Exelon? Does Lathrop & Gage actually represent Bridgeton Landfill? The other concern that I have is this. If you are working for the Bridgeton Landfill in St. Louis County, and you're here at the state level representing Bridgeton Landfill, why would that not be on the principal list at the Missouri Ethics? So I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to try to find it out today.
The question you have is that you're curious if someone's perhaps not disclosing the actual client that they're working for.
Yes, like are they circumventing who they actually represent? I don't know if that is legal, if it's not legal, but it's certainly a concern of mine that I'm investigating right now. And so as I look at the principal list of my targets that I'm looking at, I see a lot of Lathrop and Gage. I see Axiom. I do see as well as Exelon, who represents the Cotter Corporation. They take on their liability for the mess they created in the early, 1970s, 60s. But in any case, it's something that I'm looking at, and I knew that you had something to talk about, and I've been listening to the senator from Butler. Did I tell you he's one of my favorite senators?
Well, you have now.
Yes, the senator from Butler is one of my favorite senators. And well, I always get a kick every time he gets. I may not agree, but his approach to a situation is just so intriguing to me. But I was waiting for him to stop talking so I can get up and talk to you. And I know that you had a couple of issues on this bill, too.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I was wanting to inquire of the senator from Butler and perhaps the senator from the 23rd on this issue because this is important to me. And I know it's important to those two senators as well. I worry now that perhaps the hour of midday is wearing on people, and I don't know how much longer I want to put everyone through that, since every point that I've wanted to talk about has been hit. But I do appreciate you having this inquiry.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on House Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 47. Senator the Fourth, what reason to your eyes?
Briefly inquire the Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, yield.
I do. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Late night, but I'm used to that.
Sure.
Sleep when you're dead.
That's right. That's right. A few more days, and then we'll maybe have a couple days off.
All right.
I wanted to talk to both you and the senator from the 23rd on this, and I know that you guys have hit all these issues, and I don't want to keep going back down the same rabbit hole. But I, like you, have been frustrated both this year and in the past on the lack of progress moving towards
a fix to our
transportation funding crisis. When I was over in the other body last year, I was exceptionally critical of the Transportation Committee sitting on that bill
yep.
to fund us. Every bill that came up on the floor that came out of that committee that wasn't that bill, I made a point to recognize that fact. And I know there's a disagreement between how we're going to get there, but I think it's important that we recognize that we have a severe problem right now. It's not coming in the future. Last year was a problem where we didn't know if we were going to have enough federal funds for
that's
the match.
Right. That was a major
You're close. Problem.
You're close.
Very close. And I'm worried that we're getting even farther down. And I'm a little bit disappointed in myself. I probably should have filed that legislation this year myself. And maybe we'll look at that next year. But, it's a problem, and I appreciate you bringing it up on the floor and even at length. Because if we don't talk about it, and we've talked about it,
We've talked about it this year. We've talked about it last year. We've known this problem is coming for a long time. And while I appreciate that we're going to form a committee here to look at it, we know what the problem is.
Right.
And we know what some of the solutions are.
Right.
So I don't know where we go from here.
Well, we're trying to figure out how to pay for it without having any more money. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Well, I think the
bottom line is, how do we build all these roads, how do we repair everything without people paying for it to use it?
So, well, MoDOT's done a pretty good job, I will say, of maintaining what they have with the shrinking resources every year. And as you know, something that cost 21 or the cost of something 21 years ago,
21 years ago,
compared to what it is now,
right?
It's quite a bit of difference. Imagine if you were buying what a gallon of milk cost 21 years ago compared to today, and then looking at what it cost to pave a mile of road today versus 21 years ago.
Well, you know, an overlay back in, I'm taxing my brain right now because I don't have all it in here, but I got tons of this stuff. But it was around $50,000 a mile to overlay a two-lane. And today it's as much as $157,000 a mile. So, you know, when I say things like that, it's just kind of like gray matter or something, you know. You know, that's a fact. And the fact is we don't have more gallons because we're more fuel efficient, which is good.
Right.
You know, we don't need to be burning all this fuel for no reason, right? We agree with that, right? Now, you're an electrician, right?
I am.
Okay, do you have any friends that ever worked in the road building industry or, you know, putting lights up around intersections or anything like that?
Sure.
Electrical engineers, contractors?
Yes. Different group, but,
right,
you know,
but you would,
yes,
you
absolutely
would probably meet them somewhere along the line.
Sure.
Well, you know, when you build a road, it's more than just somebody that knows how to operate an excavator or a bulldozer.
Yes.
You got to have carpenters, you got to have steel guys, iron workers.
A lot of different aspects, a lot of skilled trades.
You got to have the people that's making the cement, the asphalt. A lot of those places have been going out of business in Missouri for a long time. A lot of consolidations. Now, when you have 20 contractors, back like it used to be, that would show up for a bid letting, and they make their bids, they have to really be sharpener pencil. But when you got 5 contractors that come in, so, or who are we fooling if we're thinking we're saving money by keep kicking this old, I'm gonna take a stand, showboat pork and bean can down the old proverbial highway. I'm gonna take a stand because, you know, Senator for St. Genevieve, he wouldn't tell me which is his favorite, but anyway, you know, who are we trying to fool? That cost is going to be increasing more than just inflation all of a sudden because it's going to be a competitiveness problem. You know, the senator from Franklin, and a company that I used to own part of, we used to bid on those jobs, and when there was 25 contractors come in, you knew you were really going to have to get your pencil sharp, right? But when 5 contractors show up and they're all pretty busy, pricing's not as nice and good.
Sure.
So how are we saving money by just continually letting this issue go by the wayside? I just want to say, I thought we should have, what is that, free and fair discussion? I thought maybe, well, you know, the Senator for 23rd, I mean, at least he brought it up. He's taking interest in highway funding. He and
That's
I visited, you know, several times off and on here and there. And, I mean, he brought it up. That's some courage and stuff, you know, for road funding. No matter, you know, and we don't disagree on a whole lot of those things. We probably agree on more than you would think. But the big thing, we have a big disagreement on. But so I just thought, you know, however many hours it is, I had it figured out a while ago. But I thought this might be the last opportunity we really get to have a transportation debate on the floor. And I didn't want him to be able to miss that opportunity because we're going to get to vote on his bill here tonight. So, but, you know, I promised him some point in time that we would have a conversation and debate and all that stuff. And he's been in my office, and we've sat there and batted it back and forth, you know, like a tennis player. But in your area, when you drive Interstate 70, right?
I do.
Okay. What would you think? What do you think would happen if one of those bridges got closed on Interstate 70? You just pick whichever one you want. I don't care. Doesn't make a difference because they have to go over all of them, right?
Right. Look what happened a few years ago in Minnesota on Interstate 35.
A lot of people lost
their
lives.
Section of bridge. They did. Section of bridge just completely collapsed underneath them. I'm worried about that. When you look at how many structurally deficient bridges we have in the state, and the list keeps growing, it seems. And we've got let's be honest, we have an infrastructure problem throughout the United States. But we're approaching a crisis level here where something's going to happen. Something bad is going to happen. People are going to lose their lives, and then everyone's going to be outraged. Why didn't we do something about it? And the truth is that we had an opportunity, and we chose not to.
Right. You know, we are the, you know, I've also been involved in the trucking industry for a long time because what I also did in manufacturing required us to have big rigs. And previous to that, we had other big rigs and haul for other people, too. So I still stay in touch with a lot of trucking companies. But, you know, we are the crossroads of America right here in Missouri. But there are people getting really concerned. And we sit here on this Senate floor and over the House, and we're always talking about jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, who would want to come invest $50, $100 million if they picked up the newspaper or heard me talking here today, or me and you, or me and the senator from the 23rd, or me and the senator from the St. Genevieve or wherever, or Franklin or wherever? Would they feel comfortable coming in here knowing just-in-time deliveries and that we got bridges that's almost as old as I am and older? Matter of fact, the two bridges...
Senator, you don't look that old.
Well, you need to get up closer. Only my hairdresser will know for sure. You remember that commercial? Yeah, you're too young for that commercial. Only your hairdresser knows for sure. So, anyway, you know where the confluence of the Mississippi and Ohio River is over by Cairo, Illinois? You know how old those two bridges are?
I don't.
Almost 80 years old. 80 years old. And trucks trade mirrors there a lot. You know what trade mirrors mean?
I do.
Okay. And sometimes they come inside your window with you. Because I've drove big rigs and went over in there before with that. So here we are.
Senator, can you imagine driving a car that's 80 years old on a daily basis?
Yep.
I mean, it's just going to wear down. It's going to break.
It's been wore out for a long time. And there's another issue going on over in Kentucky right now that myself and several guys from the Highway 60 corridor, we're trying to convince Kentucky not to build a new bridge where the old bridge is right now, because you've been through there, right? You do those two bridges before?
I do.
You know, you pop over the Mississippi, and that's one of the only places that Highway 60 remains a two-lane. It takes off at Charleston and I-57, and it cuts over to a bunch of curvy little roads just to get to those two bridges so you can get over into I-24 toward Nashville. But anyway, those two bridges...
Go ahead, Senator.
Those two bridges over there. Let's go back to your I-70 bridge. Now, here's what happens when your I-70 bridge gets closed. And Fenton, I-44, kind of told a story on that the other day. What happens is, I remember reading in the Post over there about how many... your travel time is going to go from minutes to hours, right?
Right.
Okay, here's what happens. So you got all these trucks and cars and delivery of goods and services on Interstate 70. You know what happens? They have to detour. They have to detour. Now, what do you think is going to happen when that many trucks have to detour on side roads? Those side roads weren't built to the same standards that interstate roadbeds are. So now you're exacerbating the problem. Again, I don't understand why anybody thinks we're saving money by not putting money to this issue, because we're not. So we're going to wear those roads out that may have used to been having 3,000 vehicles on them today. You know, over by Wentzville, I think it's something like 70,000 vehicles a day or 80. I mean, I'm taxed. I've got all that stuff somewhere, but it's not up here with me at this time. And then it reduces a little bit as you come west, and then it picks up again, you know, before you get to Lee's Summit. Well, that's what happens. Not only do you have inconvenience, you're tearing up other roadbeds that wasn't designed for that. Because there's no such thing as not needing the stuff. You got to have your goods, right? You got to have your groceries. You got to have your gasoline. You got to have the things that's required. Your businesses. How about your businesses? So there you have it. And
How long are businesses going to continue to invest in the state if they can't move their goods and services around if we have some type of catastrophic failure in some portion of our highway system?
Can you raise your microphone up just a hair?
I will. Sorry, Senator. How about
that? Remember, I'm older than some of them bridges on Interstate 7. Actually, I'm a little bit older than they are. So you know how much it costs? $6 to $10 a year. for an average motorist to being able, you know what, Interstate 70, we could have already been 3 and 4 lane in that thing. You know, you can toll Interstate 70. It's the only one left. Now, you can build a new toll road somewhere if you want to. But again, the senator from Franklin and I were already talking a while ago. You still have to buy the gas or the diesel. So it's not like, well, hey, we'll just drive on a toll road and get some gas and not pay no tax. That's not the way it is. It's duplicated. So herein lies the problem. Who, when they pick up the newspaper or Google us over here, and they see that we're having discussions on the Missouri Senate floor today about road funding that has not been adjusted since 1996. Being in the manufacturing business and having plants in other states, that would have scared us off. You know, you got to get your employees to work. Sure. May have some kids you worry about getting to school on a school bus or going to a volleyball game or something. Bridge collapsing or whatever, and that's not too far fetched, to be honest with you.
You know, our state is somewhat uniquely situated for, I think, for business growth with the amount of ports that we have, our river system, our fairly large roadway system. I mean, for moving goods and services, with our rail hubs that come through Missouri, you know, we're uniquely situated to be a transportation hub. But what message? My concern is, what message do we send when those articles are out there in the paper, when people are looking. They're out there that they know that we have a funding crisis. They know that we're dead last in gas tax. I mean, it seems like we're sending them the wrong message. Come into the state, bring business in the state. We're going to let things keep going the way they are, though, with our roadways. So we stand up here all the time and talk about creating jobs in the state. We know that we have resources in our transportation network that for moving goods and services. There's probably very few states that are better suited than us to have access to rail, air, waterway, and transportation networks for moving stuff. Why would we continue to put those businesses and our future growth potential out, kicking it down the road, waiting for something bad to happen?
No, we're second and third in rail. You know, like over by Kansas City there, over to Kansas there a little bit. I've been to that one and also the Kansas City rail services in St. Louis. And Long Beach, I think, is probably number one, I believe it is. Again, I got all this, but you go in my memory. But, you know, just because they're in a railroad business don't necessarily mean they're not in a trucking business, too. Because you see all the traders on flat cars.
Right.
You know, and a company called J.B. Hunt, years and years ago out of Springdale, Arkansas, they were the ones that kind of pioneered a lot of that because they were doing a lot of intercontinental shipment of goods, and they determined, hey, we can ship a trailer to L.A. or the West Coast, which is kind of the same thing that we did at Poplar Bluff. We had distribution in Los Angeles area, so we'd send like five trailer loads in a boxcar instead of a tractor trailer type van, but we would send it out there. But it has a lot to do with the shortage of truck drivers. So, you know, anybody don't think that business is going to figure out how to get the goods moved, they're going to figure it out somehow.
They will.
And truck drivers have been so short, and so it was a good thing they got that all pioneered, but it took years to get that all figured out. Then the railroads had to make the investment in getting them cars, you know, the flat cars, so you could back a trailer on there. All this stuff takes years, but when people see this stuff going by and they see a new road or a new bridge being built, a lot of people don't realize it took a lot of effort, a lot of planning, a lot of engineering, a lot of expertise on some of the people we've been talking about, and some of the people that you're in your industry, and guys that you know and gals. So, you know, that's where it's at. But I just continue going back. You know, the trucking industry is good. They've told me they're good for anywhere from 10 to 15 cents a gallon. Because when you got an 80,000-pound truck going down the road and you had a big old pothole knocking your front end out, having a $600 tire on your front end could cause a wreck or whatever, they want better roads. They know it means better jobs. But you know what? We're always talking about bringing jobs to Missouri. I'm always interested in retaining jobs, too. Because why is it hell
to
bring in a
front bringing new jobs in, but if we're losing them at the same rate, then what's the point?
I don't know. Well, is there anything else you'd like to discuss?
Well, Senator, I'll just say one thing since I happen to be talking to you. Just getting the message that there was an officer involved shooting about a block from my house at home, and I
right
know
now?
That somebody has has, it seems, lost her life. So my thoughts will be with those the officers.
Did you say somebody lost her life?
That's what I'm getting via text, but I don't know if that's the case. But, you know, I just want to say that thoughts are with those officers and the people that are involved in that, whatever has happened. So, Senator, I appreciate the inquiry, and I know that we're on the same side of this issue. I just wanted to opportunity to talk
every
about
Missourian
this.
Is.
it's important.
Think the senator from the 23rd is also. He just has a little different viewpoint.
I agree. And when we had his bill in committee, and as you know, I did not agree with it. I voted to get it out to have a conversation out here because I thought we needed a conversation. So
right. We
may disagree on how to get to the end of the road, pun intended, but we have to get there.
Well, all I know is you can't wish yourself to success.
That's right.
All right.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion on House Committee Substitute, House Current Resolution 47. Senator from the 23rd, you recognize close. Senator 23rd, you recognize the close on your resolution.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank in closing, I'd like to thank the Senator from Butler, the Senator from the 4th, the Senator from Franklin, the Senator from St. Francois, all being part of the discussion. I know that in my election campaign season, as one of the things that has come to my attention was that there are three or four or five issues that you're generally want to talk about. Transportation funding is one of them. I think that everybody here in the body agrees that we need to come together with a plan and determine a course of action so that we can provide that solution for the people of Missouri, and that is one of the issues that is top of mind for all of our constituents. I want to thank everyone for being a part of the discussion. I think it's a good discussion. I think that HCR 47 moves that discussion forward about how we can come together so that we can address one of the most pressing needs in our state. And I would ask the body to support HCR 47 and help pass this resolution. And with that, Mr. President, I close.
The senator from 23rd moves the Senate concur resolution number 47. House committee substitute House concurrent resolution 47 be adopted. The other senator desire to be heard. The senator, you recognize close. You close. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from Webster will raise your eyes. Senator from Webster. Senator from the 9th will raise your eyes. Votes aye. Senator from Clay, are you? Okay. Senator from the 2nd, what reason your ayes? Your senator from the 2nd will be changed to an aye. Senator from Barton, what reason your ayes? Votes aye. Senator from St. Francis? Change your vote to an aye, is that correct? Your vote will be changed to an aye. Senator from Phelps, what reason your ayes? Senator Phelps votes aye. By your vote of 33 aye, 0 no, the resolution having passed a constitutional majority is declared passed. Senator from Cole, what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I'd ask them to please be read.
Secretary, are there messages in the House? Please read the message.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed Senate Bill 222 with House Amendment 1, House Amendment 2, House Amendment 3, House Amendment 1, 2, House Amendment 4, House Amendment 4 as amended. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to recede from its position on House Committee Substitute, Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 139 as amended, and grants the Senate a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House refuses to recede from its position on House Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 283 as amended, and grants the Senate a conference thereon. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute Senate Bill 225, entitled An Act Relating to Transportation, with House Amendment 1, House Amendment 2, House Amendment 3, House Amendment 4, House Amendment 6, House Amendment 1, 2, House Amendment 7, House Amendment 7 as amended, House Amendment 8, House Amendment 1, 2, House Amendment 9, House Amendment 9 as amended, House Amendment 1, 2, House Amendment 10, House Amendment 2 to House Amendment 10, House Amendment 10 as amended, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested, respectfully submitted. Daniel Adam Kremlis, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senator, go to the order of business of announcements.
Order of business of announcements, Senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Judiciary, Criminal, and Civil Jurisprudence, which was scheduled to meet at 12:30 in SCR 2, will meet at 3 p.m. in the same room. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further announcements. Senator from the 14th, what reason your eyes?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have some residents from my district, as well as other districts, who are advocating on Senate Bill 22. They are on the Capitol lawn, and I would encourage all of the staff members, including senators as well, to at least go say hi to people who care about saving lives. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator from Barry, what reason you guys?
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, to announce that we'll have our seersucker caucus picture taken immediately on recess. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand in recess, according to the Senator from Cape Girardeau, till 14:30 this day. 2:30, Mr. President. 2:30 p.m. this day.
The Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess to 2:30 p.m. this day. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Senate is in recess till 2:30 this day.